Oh, sweet baby Jesus. We're back again, ladies and gentlemen. This episode of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. What's that, Joe Rogan? Why am I talking about myself in the third person? I'm getting bored with these things. Squarespace is a new sponsor, and it's a very cool one that I'm excited about. It's an extremely easy way to build an awesome website. Everything is integrated. You just go online, and the whole setup is there for you. Like, you don't have to learn coding. You don't have to learn HTML. It's super intuitive how they do it, and you don't even have to spend money to try it. If you go there, sign up. Go to squarespace.com/Joe. No credit card needed. You just try it. Start building your website. You can create your own online store. It's really badass. 24/7 support. Really responsive design. Your site will look great on any device. iPad, iPhone, Android. You get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Then if you decide to use it, you go to squarespace.com/Joe. If you want to use it, you say, hey, you know what? I tried this out. I like it. I'm going to make a website here, and I'm going to put it online. Use the code JOE3. It's 3 because now we're in the month of March. I don't know why they decide to have the number with correlating with the March.
Tracking months.
Yeah. The month of March. Month of March, rather. Month of March. If you use the code JOE3, you will get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, including monthly and annual plans. So that's squarespace.com/Joe. Use the offer code, all one word, Joe and the number 3. All right, you fuck.
You know what they have cool?
Everything you need to create an exceptional website.
And if you want to sell something, they have a shop feature that you can just pretty much sell anything you want to.
Yes.
And it's really easy to upload images.
Yeah.
And
super easy to create your own online store. Super fast. So check it out. It's a very cool website. We're also brought to you by Ting. Ting is, as we said on the podcast, if we're selling something, it's always going to be a good product. We're not selling anything that's dog shit. And we also, one of the things that we like is companies that have a good ethic behind them. And I've never even heard of a company like Ting before. The way Ting is, what Ting is a cell phone company that uses the Sprint backbone, but they have no contracts. And the way they have it set up, you can buy all high-end Android phones. They have the Samsung Galaxy S3, the Galaxy Note 2, all those like serious killer Android phones. Well, when you use them, like say if you have a plan that has X amount of minutes, if you don't use a certain amount of service, if you use less than you thought you would, Ting actually drops you down. So you hit credits and credits you the difference on your next bill. So that is like, I've never even heard of that before. They actually drop you down to the next level, and they credit you the difference in money. I mean, that's amazing. That's a beautiful company. I think some companies like Ting are starting to realize you don't have to rip people off to make money. You don't have to extract every last drop of blood out of them to make money. What you can do is offer people a good service with an ethical ideal behind it, and don't try to rip them off. Just try to give them something good, and people will respond. And that is what we've been seeing with Ting. If you go to rogan.ting.com, you can save $25 off of either one of the Android devices or their service. I've got a lot of people from Twitter that have contacted me after switching over to Ting and told me how much money they're saving. And, like real substantial money. And people are very happy with the service. It's on Sprint. And it's not like it's a small, mom-and-pop cell phone company. It's on the Sprint backbone. They buy time there. So it's a really badass service. So please go and check it out, rogan.ting.com. This Wednesday night, is it, Brian?
Thursday
night?
This Thursday.
This Thursday night. You guys have a Death Squad show at the, what does that mean, Death Squad show? It's a comedy show,
yeah.
God damn it. It's a comedy show this Thursday night at the one of the coolest comedy clubs in the Southern California area. American Comedy Company in San Diego is this really badass, low ceiling, like really set up cool.
Yeah, and nice area too. So like afterwards, there's huge bars across the street you can just party at afterwards.
Yeah. If you've never been to San Diego, you should go down just to check it out. It's such a cool little area. People walk there,
Yeah.
Nobody walks in L.A. L.A. is, like, walk-free.
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, there's, like, a couple of blocks on Melrose where you might catch somebody walking around.
Right.
But for the most part, people are not really walking around in L.A.
From their cars.
Yeah, that's about it. So it's this Thursday night, and the lineup is Yoshi. You've heard him on our podcast.
Yoshi Didn't Podcast.
He's also a lot of times he's on David Cho's podcast. Very, very funny guy. Billy Bonnell, very funny guy. Jason Teeb, of course, our buddy. We've had him on before. He's a very, very cool guy and funny guy. And Tony Hinchcliffe, really hot, up-and-coming comic. I really believe that Tony Hinchcliffe, like 5-6 years from now, is going to be like
he's going to blow the fuck up. You know, yeah. I was watching him last night, and the most amazing thing about him is how fast he was. Like, he was doing a Don Barris goes, what do you think the lead singer of Counting Crows, is he Jewish or not Jewish? And Tony goes, Jewish. It should be the Accounting Crows. It was so fast. I was like, how the fuck did you do that fast?
Yeah, he's hilarious. He's a very, very funny guy. So that's next Thursday night.
Or this Thursday.
Yeah. This, I'm sorry, this as in the next one that comes up.
Yeah.
This one. This one in 3 days.
And it's AmericanComedyCo.com for tickets.
We are also brought to you by Onnit.com. One of the things we started carrying, it's O-N-N-I-T. One of the things that we started carrying is we started carrying these fitness apparatus things like kettlebells, and now we've added to them. We have a mace, which is this crazy pipe with a metal ball. It looks like a weapon, and a steel club. Again, it's not a weapon. Club bells are a very functional way to get strength, especially in your shoulders. They're not even that heavy. The ones I use, you use between like 15 and 25 pounds. It seems like nothing. But when you do all these things, like they're called shield casts and all these different exercises with the clubs, you'd be amazed at how much they wear you out. One of the things that Onnit is interested in, and really the only thing we're interested in, is things that increase your physical performance. There's a lot of people out there doing like bicep curls and doing like traditional weightlifting exercises, and they don't really understand you can get some benefit out of any kind of lifting weights, but to really get the maximum amount of benefit from your time, you want to do something that involves your whole body. And you'd be amazed at what kind of a workout you can get with a 35-pound kettlebell. I mean, it is phenomenal. I mean, you can get – I'm talking 20 minutes in, you're ready to die from a 35-pound kettlebell. Go to Onnit.com and check out all of the all the fitness equipment. And I always advise anybody, if you're even thinking about doing something like that, get a trainer. Just hire at least once. To have someone show you how to do the proper maneuvers so you're not you use proper technique, you're not putting a lot of strain on your body. You really should, if you can afford it, get a trainer. If you can't, there are some online videos you can get off of YouTube that are good instructional videos, but it's very important to start light and use good form. You can always get injured in lifting weights. Boss Rutan will tell you about that later. I've been injured many times exercising. It's just part of the program. If you want to get fit, you have to take chances, and if you take chances, sometimes you get hurt, but you want to minimize that as much as possible. One of the best ways is good form. Always use good form. Never allow yourself to get sloppy when you're training, and if you feel like you're getting sloppy, most likely you're using too heavy a weight. It's just for functional strength, you really can't beat the stuff that we have at Onnit.com. Battle ropes, kettlebells, maces, steel clubs. We also have a gang of supplements, including the famous Alpha Brain, one of the best cognitive enhancing supplement I've ever taken as far as vitamins go, not including certain smart drugs that probably will be illegal soon. But other than that, Alpha Brain's the shit. It's all basically the building blocks for human neurotransmitters. It's all the essential nutrients that help your mind function at its best. There's a lot of controversy when it comes to any of this stuff, and that's one of the reasons why at Onnit we have a 100% money-back guarantee on your first order of 30 pills. Whether it's Shroom Tech or New Mood, which is a serotonin boosting supplement, you don't even have to send the product back. Just say it doesn't work, and you get your money back. That's how confident we are that we're selling you the very best shit we can find. And I say this too much, but it's impossible to do a commercial fucking 100,000 times in a row and seem sincere. But I am sincere, and as is Onnit, the company, it's a very ethical company, and they're cool motherfuckers. And use a code named Rogan, you'll save 10% off any supplements. All right, you fucks. Boss Rutan is here, ladies and gentlemen. We're finna get crazy. We're gonna get jiggy with it, and we're gonna learn some knowledge from the great master. Master Rutan is in the house.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
powerful boss Rutan. Welcome to the podcast, sir. It's always a pleasure.
Same here. You know, I'm amazed with the commercials, you Fox shit motherfuckers. You know, that's great way to, you know, get it out there.
Well, you know what it is, man? You got to just be yourself. You got to always be yourself.
That's true.
You know, and anybody who doesn't want to hear that kind of stuff, I don't want them listening.
No.
So it's a way of filtering out tight asses.
I don't think that anybody hit the delete button right now.
You never know, man. Yeah. Dudes will get pissed off at anything. They'll decide that your commercial is the reason why their life sucks. This motherfucker and is on it. Fuck you and fuck on it. And they'll shoot their fucking computers. There's someone out there that you're catching them. They're at 9 before you even meet them. Just and then they just decide it's that fucking Boss Rutan O-tube trainer.
Yes, yeah.
That sent me over the top.
How cool was that? My wife gave it to me just before I walked out. She said she's going to be on camera, right?
Yeah, powerful. That O2 trainer is it's like for improving the strength of your lungs. Is that what it is?
That's it. We talked about
for
it.
For folks who don't know, Boss Rutan, former UFC heavyweight champion. If you're not into the world of martial arts, I should always introduce my guests. I never do. I just start conversations. Boss is a good friend. Been a good friend for years, and one of the greatest mixed martial arts fighters in history. Legit, you're a legend. Like, you know, you when you fought Tsuyoshi Kosaka. You know, that was like one of the highest level MMA fights that we had ever seen up to that date. You know, like you when you came into the scene, when you won the heavyweight title, you elevated the entire sport. Like, you were the fucking man.
Wow.
You know that.
No, I didn't know that. I do know. I recently found out that I was actually the first heavyweight champion. I didn't know that.
Well, you were
because
actually, yeah,
there was no title yet.
There were super fights.
Yeah, there were all super fights.
Well, you were only about 210, 220 pounds at your heaviest, right?
Yeah, I was at the Randleman fight, I was under 200, and I was 200 and over. I literally had to drink water at the weigh-in to make 203, because otherwise they said it's not going to be a title fight.
Yeah, you had to be above the light heavyweight limit was 203 at one point.
Or 200.
200
pounds.
203 in Japan, right? Pride?
Yeah, I believe so.
They called it middleweight, though.
It's... What is that? That is 93 kilos, I believe, is 203.
Yeah.
Yeah, or 91,
and
something weird.
So you were a small heavyweight, man.
You know, at that time, that day and age, you could get away with it. Nowadays, you know, I would fight at 205 because it's very...
Right.
I'm already walking around almost at 205. But
right.
At that time, you fought... I like the word heavyweight title much better.
Right.
And there were all these big guys when you beat up the big guy. You only had to survive them for like 4 minutes,
right,
if they brought an onslaught. And then, you know, it was smooth sailing from there. You know, you could wear them down.
Yeah, to a lot of mixed martial arts fans, when you look at the eras of fighting, you certainly brought in the era of the technical striker into the heavyweight combat sports. Because you and Maurice Smith were really like the first guys. And, of course, Maurice came after you. But they were the first guys to, you know, to really... To like have like real technical striking, you know, not just powerful guys who can knock anybody out, because there's always going to be a lot of those.
Yeah.
But like, did you see the Bernard Hopkins fight this weekend?
No, I did not.
Great fight.
He won again.
Won again.
Yeah, guys,
48 years old.
This guy is unbelievable.
And what you can learn, like anybody who's like interested in any sort of martial art, watching that Bernard Hopkins
angles,
fight.
Angles, you know, he's really good with that.
Technique.
Yep.
His technique is perfect. His defense, the way he rolls away from shots. And even then, he occasionally got hit, but he knows how to cover up. He knows how to protect himself. And the technical fighters are always going to have an edge. It's not easy to be technical. The instincts are just to go, go crazy and attack. But there's got to be a method to your madness, and that's what separates the men from the great men from, you know, the other fighters.
Well, you were talking about Maurice Smith, and I have to tell this really funny story real fast, because I fought him twice, actually,
right,
in Pancras. And it was this one time I kicked him in the head, and I go, oh, this is easy. And I made a switch kick, but I slipped and I fell on the ground, and he wanted to jump on top of me. And I go, wait. And he stopped, and I get up, and I go, thank you. He just said stop.
Yeah, you told me this before. That was hilarious. It's unbelievably ridiculous. You hypnotized him.
Yep, that's it.
You used Jedi mind tricks on him.
Time out. Wait, 1 second.
You were having some back pains as far back as the Kosaka fight, right?
Yeah, it all started there. You know, 6 weeks before the Kosaka fight, I had Del Golar, the wrestler, had him in a triangle choke, and he thought it was smart to lift me up and slam me down, and he slammed me with my head against the wall in the corner. And that really did some damage to me, you know. I had a baby at the time, just couldn't even lay on my chest.
Wow.
You know, I couldn't breathe, couldn't cough, you know, and I brought that that thing with me to the Randleman fight as well.
Wow.
You know, but, you know, once they put me on the posters and they introduced me like world's greatest martial arts, I go, you know, I can't say no now. I got to do this thing. You know, so I remember I was in the dressing room. I had this big syringe with lidocaine. And I was injecting myself in between my ribs. And then the camera crew came in and they see me. And it was at the time, I believe, at Universal Soldiers. And they see me injecting and they turned around. They ran out. They thought I was doing something illegal. I said, dude, I'm just putting lidocaine in here because it was so painful.
So this is when you were about to fight. You were pumping yourself filled with lidocaine.
Yeah, in between the ribs.
Yeah. Did you ever get an MRI for that? Find out what that was?
No. It just went away after years. Took a long time to sleep. I took a lot of sleep medication at the time because it would hurt during sleep.
Yeah, you probably had a bulging disc or something, or a herniated disc.
I have a lot of bulging disc. You know, yeah. I just had neck surgery 2 years ago, and then I now had it again early this year. And now they fuse 3 discs together. Now it's finally like yesterday, the day before it started, that I feel slowly, like my arm, she has a whole dent in here.
Right.
You see in here, it's all gone. It's really weird, all those muscles, they have to start refiring, so to say. And then,
so it's because the nerves were cut off, they were pinched by this herniation.
Lost complete power, man. It's a scary thing when you can't grab the milk out of the fridge anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if you're used to doing one-arm pull-ups,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, that kind of scared me. So, but now we're back on track, and hopefully it comes back.
So you got 3 discs fused, so upper and lower to one, so it's 3 in a row.
3 in a row, 5, 6, and 7.
And is that an issue in putting pressure on the discs above it and below it? Do you have
that,
to?
It will happen, especially the one below it. You know, that's what they already warned me for. But like my mobility is the same. I was amazed when I came out because they told me, you know, 3 discs, it's a big deal, and but I don't feel any different than I was before. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you probably were hindered in your mobility anyway because of your disc issue.
That's probably the case. Yeah.
I'm going through a little bit of a bulging disc right now too, but I don't have any numbness or anything. But I've been getting it treated. I've been getting Rolfing done, and I'm getting spinal decompression. They put you in a machine and stretch you out.
Rolfing. Last week I had that done by this old lady that comes in and kills me, terrorizes my body. It's amazing. It's very painful, right?
It is. And you know what? A really fascinating conversation I had with this woman yesterday who is a chiropractor who told me you would be surprised. Like, people take anti-inflammatories, but how much you can do with food. Just by eating resveratrol, cutting out all your wheat, cutting out pasta and gluten and all that crap. She's like, you would decrease your inflammation so much from all that stuff. Like, we don't understand that we have very powerful immune systems for the most part, and we're constantly fighting things off. But your body is using its body is fighting off like inflammation all the time, and it's better at doing it when it's not being poisoned. When your body doesn't have wheat to deal with. Like, we don't think about it, but pasta and bread, all that delicious stuff, it's fucking terrible for you. It's like, it's basically sugar. It's just this sloppy, gooey fucking nonsense that your body's not really supposed to be eating. And she was going on and on about glutathione and resveratrol and all these different antioxidants and eating a clean, much more like paleo diet.
I'm trying. I'm trying actually gluten-free more now,
yeah.
More often. Not completely because, you
every
know, I like
then.
Carbs as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, same breakfast, shitty breakfast. All the time I had this brown rice, cracked brown rice with hot water and honey. And I've been eating that for the last years because it's the only food. Otherwise, I don't eat till like 4 o'clock. I'm not hungry during the day. I force myself to drink this thing, and then when it expands in my stomach, I get hungry. And then I just ate a burrito just before I came here, which is amazing for me because normally I never eat.
So you really have been – is this because of your injury? Or
No. I had my whole life I had that. You know, I will wake up, same – and everything with me, if it works, I never change it. Like, I have the same stretching routine. I was talking about it last time, but also the same food. But I think my whole career, I ate 6 slices of bread in the morning – with like a marmalade jelly on it, because I believe that the orange peel, you know, that it stops lactic acid from getting into your muscles. And I always had that feeling with it. And sometimes I added peanut butter, and that was my breakfast. And when I say that, that means my entire career, I would eat the same thing. I would wake up very early, 2 hours before my workout, eat, go back to sleep, And then when I would wake up, it would be digested, and I would start training.
Wow. But that's not like what any nutritionist would ever tell you to do.
No, no, no. The best thing, you know, Ryan Parsons, you know, he was with me with my last fight when I was training together with Kevin James. He was there all the time for real because they said, oh, that's a publicity stunt, him in the corner. Hey, he was pretty much every day helping me training, shouting, screaming. And Ryan Parsons, when the last fight, when you see me, I look the best I've ever looked. I go, my God, you know, this is... But it was just because that was the first time in my life I had a diet. I ate like 6-7 times a day, small portions, fish, chicken, rice, all that stuff that right. I never did. I ate pizza and steaks and beer. You know, when I was competing, that just worked for me. So again, why would I break a
you
winning combination?
You drank beer while you were in training camp?
Yeah. You know, actually in Japan, you have to understand, when you go from Holland to Japan, there's a time difference, which is... Daytime is nighttime for you.
Right.
So that means you're awake all night, and around 7 o'clock at night, in the morning, that it becomes 11 o'clock at night in your where you come from, you're going to start falling asleep. So I go, after the first two fights, I don't want to take sleeping pills because I'm going to compete. I always figured like medication slows me down, and so I always stayed away from that. But then I say, you know, let's go out. We got great Roppongi here. I would drink a couple of beers, and it worked. You know, I would come home and fall asleep, and that became my, you know, how you say, my schedule became, you know, before the fight, I would just go out, get a couple of beers, and then fall
like
asleep.
How many beers? Three?
Five. Yeah.
Five beers before a fight.
You know, you in Holland, it's so weird. You're kind of used to that. You know, in the evening, you drink those what is it, Germany, they actually, in the army, they drink during the day. There's people there. All
in the army?
Yeah, the lieutenants, the sergeants, you know.
That explains Hitler.
Einstein.
That explains where Hitler came from. They were hammered. It seemed like it made sense. That's hilarious. Yeah. So would they just drink a beer with lunch or something?
I guess. Yeah. No, they do. You know, I was training the elite special forces. They do the same thing during the day. They drink beer.
Wow. That's crazy. I never would have thought that would ever happen in the army. Well, I know some places it's common they drink wine with lunch, like in France, a lot of
people. In Greece, I had Larry Papadopoulos with me. He would every morning he had his port with him, and he would drink a glass of port every morning.
Really?
Yeah, like a half a glass. You know, he said it will fight all the your immune system. It's good for that. And so
he just likes beer, the motherfucker.
Yeah, likes to get a kick in the morning.
Yeah, that's crazy. So that's you were afraid of sleeping pills, but you weren't afraid of the repercussions of alcohol.
No, because it doesn't do anything. I believe it's natural, right? I wouldn't get tanked, but I have moments that when I would with the stare down, and which I never did. I you know, only when they tried to intimidate me, then I would put it on them, you know. But otherwise, I would just look down. But I knew they would smell like the booze coming from your mouth. They go like, this guy is crazy, you know. I always thought, actually, because at the end I didn't do it anymore because I was fighting here in America and I didn't need it because I'm falling asleep. But I was thought, you know, to go to the – just before you go to the center of the cage, flush with whiskey in your mouth. Spit right out to go to him and then let him think that you're hammered, you know, just to get – inside their heads.
Yeah, there's some guys that show up in jiu-jitsu class drunk. There's this one dude who used to be drunk all the time. He'd roll with him. You'd always smell the whiskey.
Well, there's a lot of guys stoned, right, during jiu-jitsu.
I mean, true. Different, though, in that stone doesn't fuck with your reflexes. Not to me, at least. Doesn't fuck with my reaction time. I actually feel like I'm probably better at jiu-jitsu when I'm high.
Yeah.
A lot of guys feel like that. That's why so many of them roll stoned, you know?
You're more creative, Alter. I guess you come up with more stuff.
Yeah, more creative, more relaxed, more completely focused on what you're doing. They say that it's easier to get into it, you know?
Wouldn't work for me. I'm a plant. I'm one of those guys, if I do it, I'm sitting and I'm eating and there's no – you ask me two questions. Hey, boss, what's your Christian name? What are your Christian names? Where you were born? I go, oh, it's Sebastian. And Dick. Well, what was the other question? You know, I literally, my friends would laugh. I had 5-second memory. It's
right.
Amazing.
Well, everybody's different,
yep.
Right? So when you were competing, so no weed, even though you live in Holland.
No, never. It was never my.
A lot of people in Holland don't really smoke weed. Isn't that
no,
funny?
No, you know it is because it's not.
It's not taboo.
It's not taboo. You know, it's like a drinking age you don't have in Holland. I think you now have. It's maybe 14 or something, but you never had a drinking age. But all these kids, they're not going to say, "Hey, I want to drink because it's cool." You know,
right.
Because it is not cool. A 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid can do it.
Right. Yeah, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
It's just a part of life. Yeah, 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid. Holy shit, that's hilarious.
I was in America at half a year, and then I went back to Holland to visit the family, and I was looking at they call it the puppet whatever theater, and there's just these two little curtains open up, and there are people from Holland, everywhere from the country, and they can say whatever's on their mind. And there were two little kids sitting there with a bottle of Heineken, and they said, "Yeah, we like to drink beer," and they were drinking. And I look at my wife, I go, "Can you imagine this happens in America? What people are going to say? It's insane." I mean, they were 6 or 8 years old, wow, and they were drinking a beer. Yeah, my parents, oh no, they're not really against it. I go, "Whoa, dude!" And then the curtain closed again. It was the wildest thing.
Can you imagine the strip clubs? The girls are wearing bibs.
Well, they don't have strip clubs. They have whorehouses.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Holland is a totally different thing. They have a whole area where it's all whorehouses, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The red light district. Yeah, you have that in pretty much every town. You have a red light district, not only in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I mean, think about that for a second. Not a whorehouse. No, a whore neighborhood. They got a whole whore neighborhood.
Yeah,
but
window shopping.
Lowest incidences of HIV in all of Europe and lowest incidence of heroin addiction, which is really crazy.
They all get tested. They all need to be legal there. There's a lot of testing there going on. You know, and you'll be amazed. You walk there, like in the red light district in Amsterdam, and you see girls that you go, you know, there could be the girl next door. It's amazing the amount of different, the plethora, as El Papa would say, of girls that they have.
And it's not this. It's they wouldn't even think about it the same way we think about it. Like the way life is there from the get go is so much different than the way life is here. That, in my opinion, like to change our laws and to make it so that prostitution's legal, to make it so marijuana is just openly tolerated everywhere, and kids can drink at 12. Like, man, you would almost have to start from scratch.
Yeah, yeah, you have to. It's amazing. Like, I couldn't do it. If you go to the red light district, sometimes you see like 8 guys in a row waiting in front of one window.
And she's hot.
And then, but can you imagine the guy comes out and he's like an ugly dude coming out, and then you gotta go in?
Yeah.
You know, it's not for me.
It's like, don't get sushi on Sundays, don't go to a Korean spa at 9 o'clock at night.
It's a broth.
Yeah, it seems like Holland is all in all just more laid back, more fun, wilder people, right? Like a big, big kickboxing scene, huge kickboxing scene.
You know, I was just watching today on Facebook, somebody posted the Majiro Gym on my Facebook from 83. That was when Andre Brilleman was still alive. You know, the guy who got killed and tortured.
There's
a big story in Holland. He was a phenomenal kickboxer. You saw Rob Kaman, Miloel Goebbels, I mean, Fred Royers. The 8 guys from that gym were all world champions. I mean, they went to Thailand, beat the Thais. It was insane. I went to a show in the Jaap Eder Hall in Holland where there were 4 world title fights, and they broadcasted it live to Thailand, and the best Thai boxers came there, and there was like El Goebbels and Rob came and all these guys, and we won 4 out of 4. They knocked these guys out. It was the craziest thing. It never happened after that again.
Well, the Dutch style incorporated a lot more striking with the hands, right? A lot more boxing technique.
That's it. Tying it together. That's, I think, the biggest thing. And they had great hands. Everybody has great hands there.
And the Dutch style of striking is really, like, to the layperson, it looks like you're just kicking and punching. But the technical aspects of it, like, I've taken some classes with Rob Kamen before. Mm-hmm. The way he breaks things down into, like, patterns and how to follow these patterns. He's got, like, these automatic patterns.
Yep.
That he does, like when your foot is here, he's doing this. When his arm is here, he's doing that. He hits with the left hook, and then it's the right leg kick. And he's got like this, you know, this really technical system that when you see him sparring, it's really fascinating to watch it in action.
Yeah, because he just taught it himself to do it all the time.
Yeah.
Like when I hold focus mitts for my guys, I have shin pads on myself. Mm-hmm. And out of the blue, I kick. And I'll do a mitt combination, whatever they don't expect. And they got a whatever, left kick, he counters with a cross hook low kick.
Right.
And the other kind of hook cross low kick. You know, and then we change the combination, right body, left hook low kick, you know, or left hook, right body, you know, and liver shot. Right. I mean,
but it's all the same. Program them into the head so that in combat it all comes out
automatically. Here, attack comes, bam, bam. There's your counter. And whether it's going to be started with a body shot and then a head or a head body or a head body body, whatever it is.
That's what people really truly don't understand about what's required in order to pull something off under extreme stress.
Yep.
You know, we had Sam Sheridan. He wrote that book, A Fighter's Mind.
I have somebody recently talked to me about it. Yeah. Yeah. Very good book, actually.
Great. And he's got a great new one out called The Disaster Diaries.
Yep.
And it's all about pressure and dealing with natural disasters, horrible situations where people's character gets exposed,
yep,
and how to stay calm. And one of the things he's talking about in the book is about, like, how your body moves in a competition, and that the only things that are going to come out are the things that you've drilled into your brain to the point where they're in your subconscious.
Yep.
So, like, the left hook whizzes by your head, the counter's right there. It's just automatic. It has to be automatic because you're not going to have time to think, and you're going to be flooded with adrenaline.
I had a guy who came to me. He actually won the amateur title last weekend, Jens Grau. He was 38 years old when he came to me. He was 245 pounds, was a power lifter. And he wanted to train. He had a torn bicep. He had this big bar sticking out of his arm. He said, when do you want to train? He said, tomorrow. So I grabbed him by the bar and I pulled him to the side. I said, not really working, right? And he goes, yeah, I don't know, but maybe we can start with kicks. I said, first of all, you're going to lose that weight. I mean, this is going to stop you. You can't even scratch your back. And he started training. And every time he would ask me, boss, when you're on the ground and you're sight much, you teach us the knees to the thighs, right? Yeah, that's allowed, right? Yeah. Why is not anybody doing it? I said, because they're stupid. They don't do that. I said, well, wait till you're fighting. And then another guy is in a clinch. You know, you can hit the thighs too or elbow them. And yeah, why is nobody doing it? I went, wait till you're fighting. You'll find out when you're fighting. And every week he came back with another question. I said, just wait. Now, I had a few combinations. I have combinations. I give you like three combinations, stand up, attack combinations, three up against the wall, and then on the ground some. So there's only six you get. But when they come back at you, almost a guarantee they're going to knock you out. You know, they're just really solid combinations. And one of them was a big hook net to the spleen, but you keep your whole demeanor low, and then you're hitting high. But everything stays low, so he thinks it's another body shot. Now, the fight started. It was amateur, so it was. He was all over the place and nothing. Oh, my God. And his hands were not
craziness.
Good. But the one thing came back and was the right hook to the body, right hook to it. And that's how we knocked him out. You see, and there you see, like, even in all that chaos, because I always tell the people, when I knocked out my first Thai boxer, if they would, at the moment of knockout, they would have blindfolded me. They would have called in five other guys. And then they would put my blindfold off, say, okay, who did you fight? I had no clue who I fought. It's a person, but you can't. He doesn't have a face. It's like you know, there's too much going on. It's like the first time driving a car. But once you can channel all that, you know, start listening to their corner and doing that stuff, then it comes together. But that, and it's all panic. One combination came back and happened to knock him out.
Yeah, how did the Dutch figure that out? How did the Dutch figure out to add the hand combinations and the boxing combinations? Because the Thais were already using their hands, but much less so than they were using their legs.
I have no clue. I
was
think
it just the size of their bodies. Was,
yeah, I don't. I think just it automatically came with them. You know, they. I truly believe it really started at Majira Gym there. You know, that mm-hmm. with Rob Kamen, so all those guys there. You know, and then Shakuriki, all those gyms, Mangho, you know, Core Hammers. And everybody started, come on, I recently saw a video from Roman Deckers when he was 19 years old, you know. And that was at the time when the first time when I saw him destroying somebody. My buddy told me, he says, watch this, man, you're going to freak out. And I thought, he's going to get killed, this kid. But he just drilled. He gave him a low kick and the guy flies horizontal in the air and he falls. And I was like, what? I mean, you got to see pictures of him. And he was skinny.
Yeah, Ramon Deckers, unfortunately, just passed away, I think 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, the 27th.
Yeah, he had a heart attack while he was riding his bike. He was amazing, amazing guy to watch. You could watch the older fights, and then the newer fights as you know he got older, he got thicker, more muscular. But you're right, in the early days when he first started fighting, he was very, very thin.
He was every interview for 25 years I've been saying it. You know, the best striker. You know, MMA Bloodlines. You know that T-shirt company that wanted to do something with me and. With MMA, but also with kickboxing. Mm. And I say, nah, you know, from Holland, you know, that you got to go to a Ramon Deckers, Peter Ernst, Ernesto Hoes. Yeah. That's not me. You know, I'm to the MMA because these guys are just really good. Yeah. You know, and my whole style was pretty much what Decker did. And I took that and I took Mike Tyson, you know, because he's the most powerful striker. And I adapted my whole style like that, square up, stand up square. Yeah. Oh, you got to be a smaller target, all these people, you know, I can do some maps, dude. I mean, that will stop you from body shots. Did Tyson ever go down to his body? No, he did not, you know, and he fought against the best people in the world. But he knocks people out with a jab because it's not a jab anymore. It's a straight punch at the moment when you square up, You know, and that's why I believe that. But it was Mike, that was Deckers was included in that.
Decker squared up with guys too.
Also, but not as much. But
he didn't
have
to worry about sprawl. Also,
yeah,
he didn't have to sprawl. That was a big difference, right? This shifting, like watching Bernard Hopkins this weekend. I mean, he stands totally sideways when he boxes.
Unbelievable, eh?
Yeah, and you can't do that in MMA. It's just too easy to take you down.
Yep,
and leg kicks too.
Yeah, but also, I cannot imagine. You know, Dwayne Ludwig when he knocked out Jens Pulver. We knew what Jens was going to do. He stands all the way in one line. He's a southpaw. If he wants to throw a left of a right hook, he has to load up. So right. We thought if he – right straight. That's right. It, right? And you can watch the fight at the moment he does it once and Dwayne didn't see it. You see Dwayne looking at me like, damn, I missed the one. But right away he does it again and Dwayne nails him right away with a straight punch.
Dwayne had a – well, still does. Has this vicious technical right hand too. You know, the way he throws it, it's like, it's so crisp. And that's how he got the fastest knockout ever in UFC history.
Dwayne is one of those guys that I have no clue. I was just talking to my buddy about it. It's like, this guy is the nicest guy, does everything right, doesn't do drugs, doesn't drink, doesn't cheat, knows the cleanest guy out there. And for some reason, he always has these crazy injuries. Like you misstep and he breaks his ankle and then he pulls out his knee. And I always go, why is that? You know, such a good guy. He deserves so much better.
It's physical. It's just, you know, it's life. You know, you only got so many miles you can put on that car.
That's true.
After a while, ball joints start breaking. It's a crazy thing. When you think about Dwayne had so many fights, you know, before he even got to the UFC. He had so many King of the Cage fights and, you know, he had kickboxing bouts. And, you know, he won a world title in Muay Thai, correct?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
So that's a lot of wear and tear. A lot of wear and tear on your body, you know.
I saw Dwayne first time when I did the Bosworth Invitational. Actually, a lot of fighters nowadays who became bigger fighters come from that tournament that we had. And it was so badass at one moment. You had to fight four times in one night. And there was almost no weight classes.
Didn't they do that recently?
Glory? That was a long time. Yeah, Glory does it also, but it's with striking.
Yeah.
But that's where I found Dwayne for the first time. He was there, and we needed an opponent for somebody, and he just said, oh, I'll do it. And this little kid jumps up, and he fights this guy, 30-pound heavier, knocks him out with a head kick. And I go, ooh, I got to know who this kid is. And we became friends instantly there.
Yeah, Dwayne's been around. Very, very nice guy. And now he's the head trainer at Alpha Male.
Yeah.
That's great.
How cool is that? He was teaching a seminar there.
I love watching guys like you move into commentating careers too.
Yep.
You host MMA Live now, right? What is it?
Inside
MMA. What is MMA Live? Does that even exist anymore?
I don't know.
There's all these different fucking names. The important thing is it's on Access TV. It's you and Kenny Rice and guests always. And you've been doing it a long time now.
6 years, man. It's it's getting crazy. Yeah.
That's a good
every
gig.
Week. It's a great gig. This is the gig that pulled me out of all the stress. You know, people have no clue what I had to do to stay here to survive for my family. You know, the first 9 years, I missed every Christmas, every New Year because I was in Japan doing those big shows. You know, I missed the holidays, birthdays. I missed the birth of my youngest daughter. I mean, all because I had to go. Otherwise, there was no more money. Because people think when you're on TV, but a pay-per-view, he's rich. It doesn't work like that, you know. And I had to come back, and right away I had to do a seminar here and a seminar there and constant traveling constantly. And then when Inside MMA came along, you know, they gave me that basic income. And that was the first time in my life. And now I actually have the power to say no, you know, now it's, and it actually financially is also much better because now they're going to, if you say no, they say, oh, I'll double it. No, I really don't want to. Oh, what about if we triple it? You see, but I didn't have that power all the way back. And now for me, if it really doesn't interest me, I'd rather stay with the family, you know. Yes. I missed enough. I'm trying to catch up now.
Right, and see if
I can do that.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. You were the commentator, the head commentator in Pride, and you were constantly going back and forth for that. How many fights did you go over there to cover?
12 a year, because they had Bushido at one time also.
12 a year.
When I became citizen here, right, I had to count how many times I left the country. And I had a passport, and I go, my God, this is an insane number. So I went to my old passport, and I started counting. 152 times I've been to Japan. But that's Holland and America. Is that crazy? I mean, we're talking about that. That's a 3-year solid straight, because every time was at least average a week, because sometimes it was 4 days, but many times a week, or I stayed sometimes even for 3 weeks to train there because I had no training partners in Holland.
So you were still thinking about fighting back then, too. Whatever kept you from fighting in Pride? Because you fought Ruben Warpath.
I was going to come back when, I had many injuries. I stopped really because all the injuries and the tendonitis I had, I think it comes from all the cortisone I took when I was a kid. And that started really to flaring up. And once that starts, man, it's training till the fight is going to be a nightmare. You have about 45 minutes to train without it, and then it will hit you. You might as well stop training because everything will go downhill from there. And then you're in pain for an hour and a half, intense. It's like really intense pain. And, you know, it sucked the life out of me. You're not happy anymore. And I didn't want to train. And I couldn't eat because of the pain.
Wow. This tendonitis, you believe it's from cortisone shots?
Yeah. I took way too many cortisones when I was a kid because I was so sick, you know. But anyway, then when I started recently training a little bit and just striking. You know, I tried to stay away from grappling because if I have to power out of something, then it would hit again. And then when Ken Shamrock came, I said, listen, I want to be his first fight. You know, I come out of retirement for him. I want to fight him. But he declined. He said, no, we already did it. We don't need to do it again. So, but that was the I was going to fight for that fight. And then it was almost happened with Vanderlei at the Dynamite show because there was a mix between K1 and mixed martial arts at Pride. And I said, they're looking for an opponent for Vanderlei. I said, I'll fight him. I said, but what are we doing on the rule? Listen, I haven't been ground fighting for 3 years. What about this? People want to see this anyway. We put on the Pride gloves and we do K1 rules. You know, I think that's what people would love to see, right? And that also didn't happen at last time. And it was not because of – but that would have been great, I think. Because at that time, I'm pretty in shape. I started kicking Amir's tie pads, and his whole arms were bruised up the next day. He goes, I think you're ready. So I felt good.
Oh, that would have been an amazing fight to see. Holy shit.
I still, till this day, I always say, why isn't there a company that comes out with that idea that I just said?
They did. Cage Combat.
Cage Combat, yeah.
Yeah, in, what is his name? John Wayne Parr from Australia. Do you know who he is?
I heard about him,
Badass kickboxer. Very, very good kickboxer.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, and he's calling it, I think it's called Caged Muay Thai or something like that. Let me find out.
How many minute rounds? Like 5 minute rounds as well?
I think they do it like 3 minute rounds.
Same as K1 then.
Yeah, I think that's how they're doing it. Let me find this because I know he's a good dude too. I want to get people.
You see, now that is exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, watch out.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it, that striking sports never switched to the little gloves. They never tried the little gloves.
It's amazing. It's amazing because now we realize that it doesn't really, it's not really any difference, I guess, with the impact. I think only body shots maybe because it's a smaller surface. It penetrates through easier, I think. But I don't think that the head, you know, even with a bare knuckle hitting a head or with the glove, if I have to say, I do think that with the glove has more impact.
Yeah, people don't understand that.
Than with a bare knuckle.
Bare knuckle, you can really hurt yourself.
Also,
punching some hard-headed dude in the forehead.
Oh, that's what I used to do when I was a bouncer also. I would look at my fellow bouncers and say, check this out. If somebody was angry, and then I let him throw a punch and I just leaned forward and hit him to the top of my head. You know, and that's a fun way to pull a trick on somebody because they hit you once. Once.
So John Wayne Parr's company is called Caged Muay Thai, and it is essentially that. It's Muay Thai in a cage.
MMA gloves.
MMA gloves. I believe it's MMA gloves.
I love
it. It looks like MMA gloves. Yeah. There's a difference in the way you can defend yourself, too, with those boxing gloves.
A big difference, you know.
Well, you can cover yourself up. You cover so much more area.
MMA glove goes right behind it, right through the middle.
Yeah,
you know?
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially body shots also, you know.
Yeah, right. You really can dig in with a body shot. It's not a blunt object. It's sharp.
That's
right.
Finally, we see guys, you know, doing it. I always talk about this. I never get it. I always tell my students, I say, fighting is really easy, right? You hit somebody really hard in the head, defense will go up. And there's the body for you. Or you do it the other way around, like Foreman did. Hit the body real hard until they have to defend it, and then you go on top. Now, when you rock somebody, step back. What is he going to defend when you hit somebody at the on the chin? Well, he's going to defend his head. Why on earth would you start hitting the head now? This is your moment to go to the body. but hit it hard. Cross hook, cross to the body. You know, combinations like that. Hit as hard as you can. That defense has to come down, and then you go back to the head.
And they plant themselves, and you attack the legs.
But, I mean, there's a few fighters out there. The last one I saw using it was Rory McDonald against BJ Penn, who dropped him with the body shot. Not dropping, but he was hurt. And right away, he went back to the head.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, get him in the comfort zone again to bring the hands up and then go for the body again. You see, and that I say, oh, you see? Now he's thinking.
Well, he's one of those new Rory McDonald. Is one of those new breed of guys that is getting great at everything. He doesn't just have one specialty like a wrestler who learns some ground and pound. No, he's essentially mixed martial artist from the jump. And so he's very technical in all aspects of his attack. But you're right in the striking. We're just sort of starting to see people who have a more nuanced understanding of different kicks. You know, like, how about front kicks? All of a sudden, people are landing front kicks to the face.
Yep. Yeah.
That never happened. Think about all the fights we've seen and how few guys got knocked out with a front kick to the face.
Yeah, I did knock him out, but I kicked him under his nose on a Frank Shamrock. It's a front kick in the nose.
And you had a shoe on, too.
Yeah. You smell that.
Yeah, Pancras was a weird thing if anybody has never seen it before. They wore shoes and then shin guards over the shoes, and you couldn't punch to the face. You had a slap open hand.
Yep.
But Boss was the only one to figure out that instead of slapping, use punch combinations, but just pull the hand way back, and you know, you're essentially blasting them with the palm, and in a way, it's even better because you can't break your hand.
You know, until this day, I still don't get it that people don't use it, because I always say it's very simple. If I'm standing here, this is the target, a left hook, right straight. If I connect with the left hook, I'm too close for my right straight. It doesn't have power. It needs space to get power, to get pick up speed, so to say.
Right.
But if I do a palm strike, and when I do, you see it already, but I pull all the way back, I hit with this bony part here.
Yeah.
And I hit on the ear, just here underneath the ear. But now the straight punch is way better lined up than the left hook, right straight combination. So I don't get it. I get it a cross hook, because with the cross you bring the head backwards and then the hook will catch it. But the left hook, right straight, I say use a palm strike, and still till this day they don't do it.
It's essentially a bitch slap right hand combination.
That's it.
That's what it is.
Yeah, maybe they don't do it because of that. They think, you know, but how cool is that bitch slap to knock out?
Today you have to keep your hands closed. You can't. You're not supposed to strike with your hands open. I mean, I guess you could probably get away with a karate chop or something like that. But the issue is going forward and poking eyes. We have a real problem with eye pokes.
Wow,
your guy have been around a long time.
Yep,
and you fought, you know, the bare knuckle days. Did was there as many eye pokes back then as there are now?
You know, no. What really messed me up was the pro wrestling I started doing after my career was over, and I started, you know, I felt that I could do something again. And Inoki asked me to do pro wrestling. My first fight, I break a disc in my back. And then the second one, I rupture my eyeball with a finger in my eye, because you don't block the punches. You let him hit you.
Right.
And the third one was, an eardrum that's been broke for 6 years straight. Because you fly, you can't fix it. Because you cannot fly for 6 weeks when you do it. Actually, this is a funny story. My first pro wrestling match was with Don Fry, was in my corner. I was fighting this guy, Nishima or something. It was at the Tokyo Dome, right? So 60,000 people. And you go through, this is what you do in the beginning. Then you ad-lib a little bit. And in the middle, you do this. And then you ad-lib some more. And at the end, you know, you get
the
wrap-up.
So this is an orchestrated pro wrestling
event. Real pro wrestling. And it was going to – he was going to – at the start, he was going to pick me up, throw me in the corner, and give me like three elbows in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would go to the audience like, woo, and he would drop me with an elbow. I would take an 8 count, you know, and then the fight would start. So, but I never pro-wrestled in my life before. So he attacks me, and the first elbow he gives me is perfectly timed. But the second one is a little harder, and the third one, he hits me full. And my automatic reflex kicks in, and I go, boom, and I hit him in the face. And he goes, and he's out. So I look at Don, and he goes, what? And I go, I don't know. And the referee, he's walking around the guy, and he goes, one. And he walks around a few times, two, and he starts dragging the time, you know.
Right,
and then finally at 8, he started twitching and he started waking up. You know, Don, for a moment, he goes like, dude, That was crazy. I said, he hit me hard. So then the next time.
So did the guy get up and finish the
yeah,
match?
Yeah, yeah. He finished the match. So that
was unconscious. Completely unconscious.
Oh, he was with his eyes open. There was no movement. Then one of them
when you wake him up, what do you tell him?
No, nothing. Afterwards, everybody got scared. So they came to me the second one. He goes, yeah, please, but no real fight. I said, you don't hit me. I don't hit you. It was very simple, you know. He hit me hard, you know. That's why.
Right. He took advantage of you.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe it was on purpose, maybe not. But
But there wasn't as many eye pokes back there in MMA.
No, not in MMA.
Why do you think that's happening so much?
I never hit like this with open hands. And I would all the way pull back. I never touch. You know, I think it's also a lot of guys who have no good control. You know, to eye poke somebody, I cannot even imagine that. It would never happen with me.
Well, they're pushing off. That's what everybody's doing.
Yeah, well, they
it's amazing that you
they
say
gotta...
that because, you know, you had, you know, you were fighting with overhand, your hands open and you weren't poking guys' eyes.
That's what I mean, you know. And I never, in Pecos, I never
It's noticed. A big, big issue now to the point where...
it looks like it's on purpose sometimes, you know. You're going to really do it.
I would hate to speculate. Yep. But it's a very unfortunate aspect of having the ability to have open fingers. And I was wondering if you think there could be a way where you could cover over the tips with like maybe a soft leather so it was all like one smooth piece over the top, but it was soft enough so that you could still grapple. Because most people don't understand, you don't really grapple like that anyway.
No.
You use your whole hand, and the only time the thumb even is involved is with wrist control. I mean, most of the time when I'm grabbing things like this because I'm pulling with my thumb. I give myself the added muscle down with my thumb, whereas you don't have that if you do this.
But only this situation, for instance, when somebody's a mount on me, and I never get this anyway. People at the mount, they let themselves just buck up. I always say it's so simple. I mean, just freaking buck up. You know, bring your feet close to your butt. Stop bucking up. He needs to look for balance.
Right.
He can't keep hitting you. Now, at the moment he looks for balance, you catch one hand, and then it's what I always say to my students, these two fingers are the strongest. So what I do, I grab two and two.
Right.
Because it's a stronger grip around the wrist than when I do this. See my see this the carpal tunnel. Sometimes I that comes with the neck. Is the
so
weirdest thing.
These three fingers
two and two I do.
On each hand.
On one
thumb.
Wrist. Yeah. I go around on the wrist and I pull it to one side, I lock up the foot and I throw them to the other side. It's a really easy simple reversal. It's
so you feel
reversal.
Like this, like grabbing like this is stronger than grabbing with both
yeah,
hands?
Yeah, because here, look, this hand is here and the other hand is here. Look how open your grip becomes because of the forearm. But if you have around two fingers here and the other two fingers there, you got a really strong grip on one hand.
Oh,
and
I see
even
what you're
when
saying.
You're on the bottom and he hits you with the other hand, you can still
okay,
break
I see
the
what
hand.
I see what you're saying for folks that don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is that at the base of the wrist, it's the thinnest. So the more strength you have, more strength in your hands when your fingers are completely wrapped around something and the finger and the index finger and the thumb are touching together. And the more your fingers are spread out, the less power you have to grab a hold of something. So in the case of the human body, you're better off grabbing the wrist with three fingers and three fingers. That's very wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very smart. And so that's what you would do and then fight for to try to get out of the mount from that position.
You know, yeah, because it's pretty easy. First of all, mount never allowed him to sit on your chest. That's a bad mount because then you can buck up whatever you want. There's no leverage, you know, so he doesn't move. So the first thing what I always say, keep your elbows here, always. Plus, if he's already a high chest, I push my elbows here and I wiggle myself upwards. You don't have to push him down, but you can push yourself upwards because the end result is the same.
Right.
Now, once he's on your belly, the other great thing that comes with it is that his feet are underneath your legs. So now with your other foot, you can catch one of those feet. You can stop
people listening
foot.
To this right now are going, what the fuck is he talking about?
I can catch one of his feet here.
Right.
And then if I grab his right arm and I pull this to the side, and at the moment I have it here, I lock it and I'll pull him to that side. I take this base away.
Does that
and
work on really good guys?
Yeah, it works well on really good guys.
Who's the best guy you ever pulled that off on?
In training?
That's the whole thing.
I don't know.
When someone tells me like some revolutionary new technique, I'm like,
Well, yeah, but that's not a revolutionary technique. I just take your post and your post away. It's a very basic thing. I think I had maybe Carlos Newton with it, Geki Sudo at the time. You know, because I've been using that a lot. You know, if you mount and you put an arm around my neck, you're on your back. I guarantee you that. I'll go real fast. I wait for those moments. I go lay like this. That means please attack my neck, man.
When you first started, you weren't a submission guy at all. You were mostly just a stand-up guy, right? When you first started competing in Pancrase. And then what was it like? Which fight was it that really made you realize, like, Ken Shamrock,
last one, put me in a knee bar. I trained 4 weeks to not get caught in a knee bar. Funaki taught me one way to stop it. He said if he's in half guard, he's going to slip over your hip. And you see me in the fight waiting for him to slip over my hip to catch the foot, and he threw the leg over my head. And I go, mother, you know, they set me up. That was so weird. But that moment on, I said, okay, this won't ever happen again. Now I'm going to listen to people. But I'm also going to find out if it's really that right way. And then I started just breaking down everything. I found one sparring partner, Leon van Dijk, and we went nuts. We went three times a day. We were rolling, watching on fights, see a move, go. Okay, how do you get out? Well, I can do this. Okay, how can I stop that? Oh, you do this. And so break it down.
So you essentially taught yourself a little bit of instruction from other people and a lot of it from tape and trial and error.
Yeah, just like that. You know, I had my big DVDs of combat, right? I had a phone call a long time ago. This is before I knew BJ Penn personally. And he said, hey, boss, it's BJ. BJ Penn? Yeah, hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm getting ready for a run. I was Matt Hughes. He was fighting at the time. I said, why are you calling? He says, I'm watching your instructionals. And I say, so? He says, the best instructions I've ever seen in my life. I go, you're kidding me. And he says, yeah, I got to go. I go, wait, can I use that quote? Because that's a great quote. But he was also a mess with, well, I do a lot of hand control. Mm-hmm. My arm bars are different. My way of breaking your grip, if I break your grip, you'll never escape. I guarantee you that. If you break my grip, I'll already set myself up. If my hands are locked, my elbow's right away here. Mm-hmm. And at the moment they start pulling, I throw my other legs in the same line as you. And I have to make a really tiny roll.
The folks listening to this on iTunes, this is all very baffling, but it's very exciting too, because there's a bunch of different branches of grappling in MMA. You know, there's like the catch wrestling sort of branch where, you know, a lot of Gene LaBelle taught guys and a lot like Josh Barnett as well, very catch wrestling oriented. And of course, there's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu oriented. But there's also like the Japanese style, which is sort of a combination of the both, like Sakuraba, who had a lot of Carl Gotch influence, mm-hmm. who's like one of the early catch wrestling guys to go over to Japan and teach these guys all these different techniques, but he also had the Japanese martial arts and, you know, and the judo submissions and everything as well. Really fascinating when you stop and think about when you started. I mean, the first UFC fight was in 93. When was your first Pancrase fight?
93.
Yeah,
so you were 2 months before, a month before, September.
You were there in the beginning of the blossom.
Yep.
You know, it must be really interesting to see all these new techniques and all these, well, really a lot of them ancient techniques, but become like mainstream and new.
What I love about, and this is something I figured out also like in the early days, because like I always say an example is the simple figure four. Everybody knows a figure four, right? I said, but if you can create a way...
Are you saying like an Americana?
Yeah, an Americana. I call that figure four, reverse figure four. So if hammerlock, I mean, there's so many names,
right,
that's why I
do
it. Also, they always forget to push the arm down now suddenly, but I mean, you know as well here, you can do it. You push it down. Come on, dude. You have to know. This is your...
Yeah, what he's saying for folks listening, there's a technique. It's like, you know when a guy's like showing you his muscle? Like, look at my bicep. Boom. Well, that... If you take that arm and just drop it down to the rib and then pull the arm backwards, there's a surprisingly small amount of room that you can move where you're in excruciating pain. But if you keep it up there where you show like the muscle, you can move way back.
People roll out. Yeah. They escape the submission.
It hurts, but you can get out of it.
But what I always say is everybody knows it's probably the first submission they've been taught. But if you can create different ways to go that submission so it's undetected, it's like a right straight to the face. You know it's going to come. But if I find a way to deliver it undetected, and that counts the same for submissions.
Yes.
And that's why I always found two or three or sometimes four four different ways to go to one combination. And when I start mixing those up, also I go from one to four, then I go from two to four. You know, then you know eventually you get somebody. And a guy who's really good with that also is Nogueira in the early days. You know, he's got triangle, armbar, omoplata, and he constantly pop 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 caught.
Sure.
You know, and that's what I like. You know, find different ways, and that's the coolest. What I see nowadays, you see guys get so creative. Suddenly there's a submission, and I go whoop! I rewind. I go, how the hell did he say that? And then you know, and that's something I really enjoy watching. You know, when I can't see it coming, then I go like, okay, that's really cool.
Now, what do you miss about Pride? Do you miss anything about the rules? Because there's like a lot of debate about like whether or not the Pride rules were the best rules. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that they favored the more skillful fighter, and they were more chaotic because they had stomps, soccer kicks, but yet no elbows.
You know, that I always said elbows, and now, you know, now we see guys start knocking people out with elbows.
Yeah.
But normally, if a fight gets stopped by elbows, 95% is because of a cut.
Yeah.
It's not because of a knockout. So, and then I say, that is not a real win. If you think about it, on the street, if you get cut, you won't stop either. You know, you keep on fighting. It's not, the cut's not going to do anything to you. Knocking them out. And that's why I say, you know, sometimes I like it even better, a knees to the face on the ground, and take the elbows out for my care, you know? And I think the ring makes it also a little bit more technical, because you can't wall walk up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole different strategy suddenly. You can lock some people standing.
Yeah.
You can lock them up in the corner. You can't do that in a cage.
Yeah.
You see, it's a whole different strategy.
Yeah, you can't use the cage to push your back against it to get away. You can't reverse people as easily. There's a lot. The wall, I mean, the cage is almost like a weapon in there. It's almost like a tool.
And now, especially now, we see Pattis, you know, coming up with the crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And pushing off with the straight punch. That one I did, but that kick, that was really crazy. Actually, that pushing off, and then with a knee, I saw the trainer from Gilbert Ivel all the way back.
Lucien
Carbine.
Yeah.
He used to do that on the bottom rope in Thai boxing. In the clinch, he would stomp on the bottom rope and then boom, a knee to the face.
Did you see Anthony Pettis has started throwing knees that way?
How cool was that? And how did he slipped it around his knee in between that defense?
It was
dude.
Crazy.
Yeah, he's got
a
great
bad
timing.
Motherfucker.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, because Donald Cowboy Cerrone's a bad motherfucker too. And when he stopped him with a body shot. And you could see Cowboy didn't want to acknowledge it. He blasted him once with a kick to the body, and all you saw was Cowboy's ab just.
Oh, and thanks for the plug, by the way. I heard Boss Rutten liver kick.
Whenever it's a liver shot, like Boss Rutten knows the power of the liver shot. And he's, you know, from Boss's commentary, you've always been so adamant about, you know, attacking the liver. Folks who don't know, where a person would hit you with a left hook, there's an area where your liver is where if you take a sizable impact on that liver, your body just shuts down. And it's a weird thing to watch. It's a weird thing to feel. You know, everybody's felt it. Everybody who's ever trained has felt it.
My first Thai boxing class, I got dropped with a liver shot. That's where my love comes from, the liver shot. I was on the ground, breathing, and asking him, what is it? He says, oh, it's a left hook to the body. That's where your liver is located. I go, oh, man. And that's when I started focusing, because I knew right away. I thought I was a badass, because in karate, I was beating people up in training and in taekwondo. But when I went to Thai boxing, because we were not used to really punching the head, you know, when they started attacking my head, my hands flew up way too high, of course, and overexposing my body, and that's when the body shot came.
I have the exact same story. I started out in Taekwondo and realized it was like right around the time I wanted to try to make the U.S. national team. I won the Massachusetts State Championship like 4 years in a row, and I won the U.S. Cup. I won some good tournaments, or the U.S. Open, but I got to the Nationals in 1988. By the time I was doing that, though, I'd already started boxing, and I realized I was full of shit.
Yeah.
Like everybody that takes karate, at least back in the day before the UFC came around, everybody that took judo, everybody that took whatever you took, you thought what you had was the shit.
That was it. Yeah,
you didn't need anything else. I got super lucky. There was a guy named Joe Lake, who's a great guy, who was a boxing coach at this gym that I was working out at, and I was teaching a Taekwondo class there, and so he started teaching me how to box, so I could teach him some kicks. So I was teaching this guy some kicks, and then we started doing some sparring with he'd bring in some boxers that I could spar with. And I just got the fuck beat out of me. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, trying to kickbox with these guys, it was my hands were so terrible. I was so unaware of how easy it was to punch me in the face. And I went through that same sort of a transition where you realize, like, wow, I got a lot to learn. Like, I developed a style that's based on no punching to the face, so it's an unrealistic style. But those guys that come from that unrealistic style, because there's so many kicks, they have a dexterity and a kicking dexterity that very few other guys ever develop.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a few guys that kick really freaking hard, come from Taekwondo, who break arms, you know.
Anthony when Pettis. They kick.
Yeah, Pettis, you know, he's a really good one.
Anderson Silva.
The thing that I had, though, when they beat me up the first class, I went back home, and I always tell my students, I always say, if I can do it, you can do it. You know, because people, they say, yeah, but it comes easy to me. Yeah, sure, maybe it can, but I work really hard as well. Don't forget that. I stood 4 hours in front of the mirror with my hands. 4 hours, and I was not going to drop my hands. And my wife at the time said, you're crazy. I said, no. This will not happen again. And the next day I went back, and I just almost cleaned. They cleaned up everybody. They almost thought that I was pulling a trick on them, that I already knew how to box or to tie box, and then I just came in. I said, oh, I spent 4 hours in front of the mirror yesterday. My hands were not going to drop anymore. The guy, though, with the liver shot, he still had the best of me. He was really good.
Well, that's just the only way to get great is to be obsessive, right?
That's it.
You got to be crazy.
I tell this story, and I you probably heard it before. I would wake up my wife in the middle of the night because I would dream a submission, and then I would put her in that submission. I would say, hey, it's your shoulder, right? Yeah, it's my shoulder. I would write it down, and then I would go to sleep, and the next day I would go. And this happened at least 6 times.
You just wake up and use her as a grappling dummy?
That's it. I would wake her up, and I say, man, I got another one. My whole house was full of little Post-its. Yeah, I was nuts, man.
Mario Sperry told me once that when I first learned jiu-jitsu, I practiced a triangle. I had my girlfriend sitting in my guard, and I go, bow. I didn't say bow. And he just would practice triangle over and over again. And she's like, stop, I don't want to do it. I'm like, fuck you. You keep doing it. He just used his girlfriend as a grappling dummy, just slapping triangles on her. I'm like, she should be honored. That's Z Mario.
That's
Mario
it.
Sperry.
But she's not with him anymore.
Probably not. Maybe he married her. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's maybe a payback. You got to see, in commentating in Pride, you got to see some of the most historic fights in MMA history.
Oh.
I mean, those days, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, I work for the UFC. Obviously, I'm biased. I think the greatest fighters live today.
At the UFC, yeah.
Yeah, I think today the level of fighters is at the highest level it's ever been in the UFC, whether it's Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, John Jones. That's the highest level it's ever existed. But as far as, like, the greatest events, you were there for those 90,000-seat events.
I was just talking 91 and a half. They came in, parachutes came in. It was the wildest thing ever.
Oh, Inoki, right? He landed with a parachute.
Yeah. And Takata on top of the roof was opening the show. I mean, it was insane. It was the craziest thing.
Jesus Christ.
A small show would be 45,000 people. That was considered the normal show.
How did he glide himself?
No, and the wind. I remember when it started, the wind was going really hard. And I go, this is going to go wrong. I mean, somebody's going to be like a fly squatted up, splatted up as... against whatever is there. But I mean, they came in, they did it. It was phenomenal. It was the craziest thing.
The Japanese sense of pageantry. Do you want a water or something, man?
No. That makes it worse with me. I like a Diet Coke for some reason. It seems to work.
Do we have anything? I don't think we have a Diet Coke. We have ginger ale, maybe.
Yeah, I'll try
coconut
that.
Water? We have coconut water.
Coconut water. I like that.
Yeah,
also.
We have coconut water, Coco Cafe. It's coconut water with espresso in it. It's delicious. You want to try that?
Yeah, I'll try that.
Get me one of them too, Jamie. Please. But the sense of pageantry that the Japanese, I still, on this TV right here, I have Best of Prides, and a lot of times before the podcast, I'll watch like a bunch of Pride fights in a row, and sometimes I forgot how insane they were.
You know, I remember the time when Dana White was there with Chuck Liddell, you know, and they were sitting there at the first row waiting, and it started. And I looked at Dana, and he was like, what? I mean,
crazy.
And I looked at him, am I right?
Yeah,
he goes, it was the craziest ever.
90, this is that Coco Cafe stuff. These aren't our sponsors, but they're cool people. They send us cool shit. It's called Coco Cafe. And the other stuff that's over there, which is unbelievably delicious, that's C2O, coconut water.
And last time I was here, and you had that, I buy it by the pellet now, too.
It's the best.
You know what the good is? Yeah. This with a cigar.
Oh,
it's the best combination.
That is a good combination. Yeah, it's delicious sweet coconut juice because it's from Thailand. C2O, they said that those coconut trees are small. They're only like 5 feet tall. They're not like a regular crazy coconut tree, but it's a Thai coconut that you want. Amy and Brian's has the Thai coconut. not NCTO.
But sometimes they have the little bubbles in also, huh? This one. This
oh, you can get the
two different ones.
The green one has little chunks of coconut in
as well.
That's what I put in my morning shake. I put, make a hemp force with hemp protein. I make a shake with
hemp.
Not even psychoactive.
It's good for everything.
It is good for
clothing,
everything.
Clothing, everything.
That's what's crazy about it. Yeah, well, they just came up with a hempcrete. Have you heard of this? They got this hemp concrete, and it's actually flexible. Yeah.
For real.
Yeah, it's that's incredible. It's called hempcrete. And
it's the same as they have at the in the Olympic Stadium.
Well, they're harder than this is what's crazy. They're harder than regular concrete.
Wow.
And lighter.
And because it moves, it's way better for buildings because it can break, you know.
It sways.
Nice.
Hemp is a crazy plant. It doesn't even seem real. Yep. And what a lot of people don't know is that it's when you're talking about, like, you say hemp, people think you're thinking about pot, you're thinking about getting high. It has nothing to do with getting high.
No,
it has just to do with
it.
Yeah, what I just mean, as a product, as a commodity, it's an amazing plant. Just what it can do is you can get this stalk, like the base of it. It's hard as a rock, but yet it's light like styrofoam.
That's crazy.
It's alien. It's like an alien plant. There's no plant on the planet like hemp. And it's illegal, these fuckheads. Jesus, boss Rutan. And it's really illegal in Japan, right? I mean, if you get caught in Japan, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah. You don't want to do that.
Was that weird spending so much time in that culture? Because Brian and I went last year, and that was both of our first time. And we were like, holy shit, this place is nuts.
Yeah, you brought a lot of the pills, the THC pills. Did you bring those along? Because they're legal, right? You can't get them on your prescription. What's the name again of those?
Orange,
Marinol, yellow.
Those fuck you up.
Yeah, but I mean, if you go to Japan, you better bring that.
Yeah,
you know. So
if you want to get high, you mean?
I got offered weed.
Yeah,
you get offered weed in Japan?
Yeah. Oh no, it's very easy to get there. Yeah, no, if you go to Roppongi, it's all
craziness. All those African dudes, that are wandering the streets trying to offer you massages.
Is that where we went, Kapongi?
Yeah,
Roppongi.
Yeah,
Roppongi. That's the one. That's
the place
I went to. Like I said before, a fight.
That's where you were going.
That's Roppongi. That was it.
Was it weird though being over in that culture like on a regular basis?
It is. I have a buddy with me from Sweden. He's young, and I know him for 4 years. Been bullied when I was a kid until also stood up and knocked the bully out and started getting. And he wants to start fighting, and he's coming now here also, and he's here for the first week, and he wants to stay for 3 months to train. And he also said, it's hard, your family, and especially, because he's used to his family all the time around. And I said, I know exactly what you're going through because I had that too. Sometimes I went 5 weeks over there. I was in a hotel room, and that was it. You go in the morning, you go train, you go back, you eat, you go train, you go back, and then you that's it. And then your video games. I was very good at Virtua Fighter, like playing these big video games there. But there is nobody to communicate. There's no going out district. The only thing they have is a Roppongi. But for the rest, it's not like you can walk in a bar somewhere. It's not. Plus, you don't want to do that because you're in training.
Right.
So it's it's hard. It's hard at that moment to be there. But it's very weird. People are completely different. It's quiet. Everything is. Yeah, it's a weird feeling. To me, though, I truly believe that it completely changed my fighting style. I was a super aggressive fighter. That's why I put those big R's on my hand in the beginning. But in Holland, I would come out very technical, boom, jab, low kick, pop, 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 boom. I would get hit. It was like disconnect, and then I would just tear them up. That's why I got like 13 first round knockouts. Just blasted people over this, would hit them out of the ring almost. Lost control.
You would try to start out technical, but then you just get crazy when you got
hit. Oh, I got hit, and I got so angry. And then when I went to Japan, I realized these guys are known to take a hit, and I figured when I found out that was the funniest part, no weight classes. So my guy was 245. I go, and that's not a problem here. No. I said, oh, okay, good, good, good. So I'm bluffing now, right? I said, so how many rounds have we got? Five? They said, no, one round. I said, one. Great. How many minutes? 30. I said, oh yeah, great. But in my mind, I went, Jesus.
30 fucking minutes.
Yeah, what the? So that's why I put the R's on my head. I go, if I unload myself the first 2 minutes, I got 28 minutes to go.
Yeah.
I don't want to take that risk.
Do you like that better? Do you prefer like when you see like the Pride 10-minute round, the opening round? There's a lot of debate about that as well, whether or not the 10-minute opening round is better or the 3-5,
Well, I can tell you one thing. The 10-minute opening round makes for a better strategical fighter. That's for sure. Because you got people have no clue how tired you can get in 1 minute or in 2 minutes. I have these 1 minute drills that I do on the back. That pros come in and they go, holy man, you know, I mean, but I go berserk, you know, give you combinations. Everything is 100%. You know,
I gotta ask this while you're saying this before I forget. Someone's been asking on the underground. Do you still sell those Boss Root and workout tapes?
Yeah, still. Everybody's using it.
Where can you get them?
Finally using them now?
Yeah.
BossRootin.com.
BossRootin.com. You sell it. Okay.
Yep.
Because there was a bunch of people that were asking on MixedMartialArts.com.
The Boss Root and MMA workout. You will have that workout is going to be your best friend. When I train myself, it's always part of my workout. For real.
Yeah.
If once you did it ever with the numbers.
Yes, it's great.
It's great because you can do it anywhere. You can do it in the
hotel room.
I was in the hotel room. I put the bed to the side with the sprawls and everything. Yeah.
And
it was crazy.
Fun. It's a fun
workout. Yeah, I love that. But the 10 minute opening round, if you overshot yourself, shoot yourself in the beginning of the round,
right.
You know, you're going to have 8 minutes left. And 8 minutes is a very long time, you know, to come back from that. So I truly believe, you know, you play always that danger as a fighter. That's why I always said to all my guys, the 38-year-old guy who I said was starting fighting, I said, stamina is going to be your number one goal. Technique, we put at number two. I want stamina at one,
right.
You know, because if you run out of gas, you can have 100 black belts. It's not going to save you.
Right.
You're going to get knocked out. And he really did that. He can go, and especially with amateurs, he got short rounds. He can blast them all the way long. He's never, and that's how he, you know, he had a hard first round, and then the guy started getting more tired. And then the third round, he just destroyed the guy, knocked him out. And that's with fighting. You play a little bit of a risk factor. That's why I always train so hard. I didn't want to have that risk factor in there. I never run out of gas in my life.
Yeah, you were never a guy that had a short gas tank, even in the Kosaka fight where you couldn't train grappling.
Yep.
And he took you down, and he was, you know, he was basically trying to grapple you in that fight.
Yep.
He didn't want to stand with you. You still managed to have the conditioning to take him out on the feet.
Yeah. And the Kosaka fight was also, I always show my backdoor escapes with, and I always said, I said, watch that fight. He takes me down. See how long he's got me. I think, 20 seconds? I'm out. You know, it's just backdoor escapes. But I would go over and over and over again. You know, when I do something, Joey, I do it. It's black and white with me. I'll go all the way and more.
Well, your style is always very interesting to me. It's always fascinating how many different people have a different approach. Like Nick Diaz's approach, where he throws he'll hit you with 50% punches. He'll just come at you like this. Have you seen the video of him shadowboxing, by the way, or hitting the speed bag? Brian, pull this up. Nick Diaz hits the fucking speed bag for 23 minutes in a row.
Wow.
It's insane, and I'm telling you.
23 minutes in a row. I did this 5-minute round, so that's 23 minutes in a row.
And by the way, he had ridden his bike 15 fucking miles to the gym. I'm not bullshitting.
Yeah.
He rode his bike 15 miles to the gym, sparred five-minute rounds, hit the pads, and then does this for 23 fucking minutes.
The only thing with me is, though, I'll do one. I don't do a bunch. I don't do that. I go I go really fast.
Right.
You know, but that is crazy. That is really it's no lactic acid.
It's amazing. I mean, he's got incredible conditioning, and he's, you know, he's a couple of days away from the fight. That's this weekend, this Saturday night. George St. Pierre and him are going down.
That's
going
to be crazy.
Woo! In Montreal. This is 23 minutes of this, he does this, boss. And at the end of it all, he's not even that tired. I mean, it's fucking crazy. This guy's not doing this at a slow pace. Look at this. Nick Diaz has, in my opinion, he's got the best cardio in all of MMA.
Yeah, but you see, he's doing what I said, you know? Mm-hmm. Just do it more than other people. Look at this, man.
Yep.
That's insane. If he does this for 23 minutes, guess why he doesn't get burned out in his shoulders?
Because he's always doing it.
This is the reason.
He does it so often. And by the way, when he's not doing it, he's fucking doing triathlons. The guy swam from Alcatraz twice. You know how crazy you have to be to jump in the water up there? It's filled with sharks.
Yeah,
that's like great white mating habitat.
Well, that was a big myth also, right, at that time, that they planted it in people's heads so they wouldn't start swimming back.
Oh, no, there's
but
fucking
sharks.
But
the stream is the worst.
Yeah.
The stream that takes people out there.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the
yeah.
most dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah, the tide. Yeah, there's a lot of shit that's dangerous. First
but
of all,
you know,
the water's really fucking cold up there.
Yeah. But you know what? And that's what I say again. What he does... You can do too.
Yeah.
You just have to do it.
You just have to do it.
And you know, and that's what the people, when they run out of gas, go run a freaking hill, man. I mean, that's what I used to do.
Well,
you
used to talk, one of the things that you said, you said, I would do one round. I would start out 1 minute.
Yep.
And I would go full clip, and then next time I'll do 1 minute and a half, and then eventually you build up.
That's it.
But you gotta. That was your style of doing it, though.
And you know what I do? I have those 1 minute drills on a bag. I have also that would be focus mitts and tie pads, what you just talked about. But I would take it even easier. What I would do is 1 minute on the bag, 1 minute rest, and I would do 15 rounds. That's 30 minutes. Then I would go the next week, 1 minute and 5 seconds on the bag, 55 seconds rest. Next week, 1 minute, 10 seconds, 50 seconds. Every time, 5 seconds more and 5 seconds away from your rest time. At the end, you're at 1.5 minute going crazy on the back. Every punch is through somebody's head. Like, there's not one half punch.
And what are you down, like 30 seconds rest?
And then 30 seconds rest. 1.5 minute full. You see guys in a fight who suddenly unload themselves for 20, 30 seconds and they gassed out.
Right?
How many times do you see that happen?
Many times.
Well, that's the drill for you, this.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be bizarre strong. And every time it's just 5 seconds more. Right. You know, every week. So if it's fine, slowly, and that you do together with the other drills that I said, going to the 5 or 6 minute rounds.
What I was getting at with the Nick Diaz thing was that it's so interesting to see the different styles, like the way Nick approaches it, where he just has a lot of volume.
Yeah.
And he doesn't blast you full blast with every shot, whereas you had a different style. You would, even when you would kick their arms, you would try to crush them. You would try to break their arms.
Make them afraid of it. Yeah. Like I say, if somebody puts his defense up, kick as hard as you can on the defense, put in his head that I better block this, because if I don't block it, you know, now you're inside his head. You see already created. But Nick Diaz has a different muscle than I have. I have the fast twitch fibers. A lot of guys out there have that. They burn a lot, but he doesn't have. He has the slow twitch fibers. And I'm not, that doesn't mean it's slow, but I mean, it has a different. He is the endurance guy, so a lot of them have that, mm-hmm. you know. But all the explosive guys, they really have to watch out how they fight. Burst a lot, relax. Burst, relax. You know, you have to fight like and train like that, because otherwise you run out of gas. That's why you see all those super explosive guys, they run out of gas, and that's the reason, because they don't train like that.
One of the things that Chael Sonnen said, he said that if you try to knock a guy out, if you feel like you have an opportunity, you try to knock the guy out. If you don't knock him out, you're probably not going to win a decision. Like, you have to realize you're gambling it all. And if the guy survives it, you might be out of gas.
Yeah, but Chael has the same thing. He has also no knockout power. You know, he just throws volume. Like, Nick Diaz, he's got knockout power if he wants. He can drop one, you know. But you see again with Chael, he's got incredible stamina.
Yeah.
You see, and that's those muscles.
It's a grappling stamina too. More. Yep. Yeah, yeah. It's just such a fascinating thing to see guys start to put it all together, and also to see the whole style changing, where these guys like these Rory McDonald guys that can do everything are starting to sort of move ahead.
And who's explosive also.
Yes, explosive also, and does a lot of explosive drills. You ever see his workouts? He's doing a lot of like jumping over those horses, you know, those saw horses.
Oh, beautiful.
You know,
yeah,
jumping over
that.
Those barriers. What are they called? Hurdles? A lot of hurdle jumping, a lot of like power lifting, a lot of like all that, you know, strength and conditioning shit that you see with like pro football players, pro hockey players. That's what you're seeing now, is you're seeing like real athletes.
Yep.
And also guys that have multifaceted attacks. For the longest time, like I've always said, like guys should throw more leg kicks, and people would get pissed at me. They're like, why do you keep saying that? You know, he's doing well on his own. I'm like, because it's not
he what can do
what
better.
He can do better. Yeah. I mean, and who am I to say it? Well, who am I? But I'm also a guy seen 1,000 fights, and I know what some people can do.
Yep.
I know there are guys, when you see a guy like Anderson Silva who basically can do everything.
Yep.
And when you see that guy, you know that those guys are possible.
Yep.
So when you see a guy who doesn't, or when you see a guy like George St. Pierre who makes it so unpredictable what he's going to do, whether he's going to punch you or try to take you down, and that's part of why he's so effective,
mm-hmm.
is because he's, you know, he's moving, he moves really well, he covers distance really well, and you don't know if he's shooting a double or if he's throwing a punch at you. You don't know. He makes you worry about it.
He's like the La Jolla used to do. The La Jolla would go to a fight, and every time he would bring a new thing to a fight, and that will be his focus on.
Yeah.
And GSP has the same thing. Like, for instance, when he fought Koscheck, it was the jab, a long jab, and it was that spinning back. He comes with two or three things, and he will throw that the most, and in between he ad-libs, and he does all the rest that he knows very well.
getting back quicks was from him working with me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I have a whole video of me teaching him how to do it.
Oh, nice.
We were at Legends in Hollywood, and it was the most ridiculous conversation. I was talking to John Donaher, and he was looking for someone to teach George St. Pierre how to throw a spinning back kick. He was asking me, do you know any good Taekwondo guys?
Here you go.
I go, this is going to sound crazy. You're not going to believe me. I go, but I got a fucking nasty turning side kick. It was like my number one technique. I could show him. And so I worked with George on it. We went over like a lot of it. He already had a decent one.
Yeah.
He had a couple of weird
rotates
things.
Over-rotating. Over-rotating, a lot of
and a lot of it was the low knee kicking up as opposed to the higher knee kicking straight.
Yeah.
Like that Taekwondo style. You started in that way, too.
Yeah, Kyokushin is from the knee. Backwards.
Yeah.
Or
more of a
with
back
up,
kick.
It's higher. Yeah, the back kick is higher with us. I'll lift it up higher now as well.
Yeah. Lifting it up higher is where you get the real power because you involve the hip in a full rotation. But,
the only example, Peter Smith. You know, remember Peter Smith, the Kyokushin guy?
Yeah.
The first time I saw him, he was doing a Kyokushin tournament, and I think he won his 6 fights in one day all by spinning back kick. And that was that kick. And he does it for the knee.
Oh, he had a nasty one.
But it was so ridiculous hard. It was like poof, and the guy would crumple. You know, it was the craziest thing ever. What a guy too, man. He's up there now with Roman for sure because those guys, they knew each other as well.
Peter Smith?
Yeah. What a great person also, man.
Yeah, he fought
a funny guy.
A lot of guys, too. I mean, he fought... He fought a lot of Thai guys, too, right?
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Yeah, guys that will mix up, like I always loved it when guys would mix up karate techniques and Taekwondo techniques with the Muay Thai, like Andy Hoog. I mean, you throw that wheel kick to the thigh.
To the leg, you know, that's how he won the whole thing with Bernardo, remember? Yeah. And Bernardo got his legs messed up already with Peter Ernst and everybody, you know, and then that was a smart guy, Andy Hoog. Yeah. Who did that? Nobody ever did that,
and he did,
and he knocked him out like that. To the legs.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing technique. A wheel kick to the leg. There's so much power to it, you know?
Oh, man, it's like those capoeira guys. Today I had a question on Facebook. If a pure capoeira guy against a pure Thai boxer was going to win. And then I go, but okay, well, I'll take the pure Thai boxer. I say Holland. I don't mean like... than Thailand. But I say the Thai boxer, of course, because they will probably close the distance really fast. It'd be in hand range, and capoeira doesn't have that. You know, they have only kicks and he's spinning. But once a kick hits, I mean, they have so much power when they propel that weight, the way they throw that kick, but landing it, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of movement is easy detectable.
It's like when Lyoto Machida landed that front kick on Randy, that jumping front kick to the
jumping,
face.
Jumping, yeah. No, even more crazy.
But the reason he could do it is because he's got good wrestling, he's got a black belt in jiu-jitsu, he's got good hands, he's got all the other things as well.
Yep.
And so then you can add those karate techniques, and then they become incredibly deadly.
Yeah, and talking about Machida, that's maybe good to mention, because one time I said, he doesn't have a lot of weapons. I didn't mean it like that. What I mean is that he doesn't use a lot of weapons. He's got the very southpaw stance, a one-line karate stance, which shuts him down for the right. Uh-huh. Like he has a sidekick, but a roundhouse kick you don't need to be worried about because he can't use his hip power in there.
Right.
And I'm not saying people go like, so he can't knock you out? I'm not saying that. We saw Kimbo getting knocked out with the weirdest little tiny punch. Everyone can get knocked out when you hit him at the wrong time, at the wrong spot for him. Right. You're at the right time, right spot. But he says his attacks are most of the time it's a left straight or it's a left kick, left straight, or a left kick, left straight, right hook. And when he moves backwards, I said, he always moves to that side. And if you bull rush him, because of his stance, he has to start walking backwards because otherwise he can't move backwards fast enough. And that's what I meant, you know. But he always, like that with the front kick, he brings something, you know. He has those same attacks, but he knows them very well. He's got really precision accuracy. And then on top of that, his counters are bizarre. But his attack is pretty much those attacks.
Machida gets a lot of heat, and he got a lot of heat in the Dan Henderson fight. You know, like when I was interviewing him after the fight, the whole audience was booing him.
Wow.
And I thought that was kind of fucked up because I thought, first of all, Dan Henderson is incredibly dangerous. Very, very, very dangerous guy. Super powerful puncher, ruthless, very aggressive, and a lot of experience knocking people out. Dan Henderson knocked out Fedor, knocked out Vanderlei. He knows how to put knuckles to chin. You know, he's a spooky guy. And there's only one way to fight him and not get knocked out. Don't get hit by him.
That's it.
And so Machida's number one goal, don't get hit by that fucking nuclear weapon this guy's packing. And I thought that was an exciting fight.
It was an exciting fight. But I can understand the people because he's a counterfighter. He mm-hmm. waits for Henderson. Henderson, though, I thought right from the get-go, he throws one punch and he stays there.
Yeah.
And I go, he's going to get knocked out now. Because Machida is very good at countering.
Right.
I thought if I would fight, if I was Henderson with his wrestling, I would just run on him. Run, put him up against. You know he's going to go that way because he does that fight 95%. You watch the tape before. Take him down and go for ground and pound. But whatever you do, don't throw single punches or two-punch combinations because he's so good at the counter.
Yeah, I think when I see a lot of older wrestlers like Dan, I mean, I know Dan recently had a knee injury, and his knee was really wrapped up for that fight. I always assume that they're going in there banged up.
Yep.
Always assume.
Like Sakuraba.
Yeah, and I think with Dan, especially because he's got so much knockout power, probably avoid the grappling. I mean, I bet he's got back issues.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he does. These guys, I mean, it's a fucking brutal way to make a living. And to be 42 now? You think he's 42?
He's the man's man, though. I really like Dan. Dan is the way when he fought Fedor. You know, that Fedor came out banging, and then you see him making up his mind like, oh, is it going to be like that?
Yeah.
Okay, I can do that too. And then he freaking came, you know, and that's what I love about that man. I saw him in Pride, like after the first round, crawling on his knees back to the corner, and then he would come out second round like nothing happened and just fight again.
He's a tough motherfucker.
Very.
He took that first Vanderlei fight. He was not in good shape.
Yep.
You could tell. He just wasn't in condition enough for that fight. And that was a scary fight for him at one point in time when Vanderlei was mounting him and pounding on him.
Beating everybody at Vanderlei at that time. It was a crazy thing.
Yeah, Vanderlei was a spooky, spooky dude back then. And, you know, and also this is in Pride where there's no drug testing.
Yep.
So, I mean, you could be on EPO, testosterone, you name it. I mean, it was just, everybody knows it. It's the dirty little thing that nobody wants to talk about.
Yep. But
those motherfuckers are juiced to the gills.
I always say, just look at the bodies, and then look at the bodies, how they changed. And most of the time, there you have the answer, you know.
And so on top of that, they didn't get tired.
Yeah,
Vanderlei didn't get tired.
It was the craziest thing ever. Yeah,
Vanderlei in his prime back then, man, he was so fucking scary.
How cool was it to see back in Japan that fight?
It was amazing.
Wow,
have him beat Brian Stann. Oh, classic Vanderlei. You know what I liked about that fight too? He didn't cut down to 185.
Yep,
I think that.
That's not good for him.
I think it hurts him.
I tell everybody, you know, this is the thing with fighters, a bunch of fighters. When they lose in a certain weight class, they blame it on the other person cutting more weight than them. And that's why they were strong. I said, dude, make up a technique. Yeah. You know, get more stamina and more technique and work harder. You know, that's what I would do. I always fought heavyweight. Also, I could easily fight under 200 pounds. I was under 200 pounds, but I didn't want to do it because I saw all these guys, all my friends, getting sick. I mean, they were all shrunk up before the fight and they're stressed out. You know, I say, keep the body happy, man. You know, you're beating it up every day already, two times a day. The only thing I can do for it is give him what he wants. You know, give him all
nutrients.
The fluids, nutrients. Yeah. Give it to him. And don't pull that out. It's the worst thing you can do.
People don't understand what we're talking about if you're not into MMA, but there's a real issue in mixed martial arts with weight cutting. And what that means is, well, guys will weigh, say if you had to get down to 170 pounds, there's guys that weigh, like Anthony Rumble Johnson, well over 200 pounds.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well over 200 pounds. He's enormous. He's fighting heavyweight now. Anthony Rumble Johnson, in I think on March 23rd, he's fighting Arlovsky.
Yep.
At heavyweight.
Yeah, that's
fucking crazy.
Yeah.
He used to cut down to 170.
70.
And what that means is you essentially starve yourself and then dehydrate yourself. And dehydrate yourself the day before the fight to the point where guys would black out. Guys would lose they couldn't move their legs. Like literally their legs would stop working.
Yeah,
and then they would have to fight in a cage fight the next day.
We had to pull Hordeski out of the sauna, you know, he'll pass out. He lost in 27 pounds.
In a day?
And the day, the guy, the
he's a young kid.
The athletic commissioner said that it was the biggest difference he ever saw. That's almost two weight classes up, that he was 27 or 28 even pounds heavier the next day.
But didn't Hordeski was like 18 at the time, too.
Yeah,
right?
I was very young. Yeah, I think, 18, 19 was when he started fighting at the IFL. So, and I remember the first time because he fought the guy from Hanzo. And I go, oh my God, because it's a baby. You know, you look at me as a little baby boy. And Sean goes, don't you worry about it. You watch. And then he started, man, he went to town, and he became a fan favorite right away.
Yeah, he looked like he had a little bit of body fat on him, though. I mean,
yeah, at that time, yeah.
He could have, like, lost the weight correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, guys, longer out.
Weight cutting, man. It's just so.
Don't do it.
But then again, some guys know how to do it well. Like, look at Benson Henderson.
Yeah.
You know, he does it great. He doesn't look sucked in. He is obviously very, very lean, but he's disciplined about it. And because of that, when he fights, he's got all the stamina in the world. He can do 5 5-minute rounds, problem. And, you know, he's huge. He's huge for 155.
Some guys, though, they drink 2 gallons of water a day, you know, and that's a lot of pounds right there. And if you only have to cut that out, then it's easy. But I think once you start cutting before and you start eating away muscle, you know, that you're doing it wrong. And once the reserves are going to be asked for in the body, and they're going to say, okay, I truly believe it, like the brain fluids, God knows, you take them away there also, you know. And that is the reason the brain is bouncing upside down, and that's why people get
brain damage.
Yeah,
and people don't know this, but in boxing, I believe all of the deaths ever recorded were below the heavyweight division, because the heavyweights, I mean, there might be some, you know, some rare occurrences. Boxing's a tough game. Some people might have died as a heavyweight, but most of the incidences were in the lighter weight classes when guys cut a lot of weight, and that was when they used to have the weigh-in the day of the fight.
Yeah.
And that was also when they weren't using IVs. What a lot of folks don't know is when you see these guys, they dehydrate themselves. One of the things that's sick about it is they go and they get fucking IV bags stuck in their arm. They get a needle in their arm, and they replenish their fluids that way.
Yeah, I would walk in a room, and the whole room, everybody would sit there, and there's bags hanging everywhere, you know, and they get re-tanked.
How about fucking blood? I know a guy who went into a room where one of the fighters is way back in the day. And the guy had fucking pints of blood out that they were putting back into
him. See, if that's blood coming out of the fridge, that's like EPO. They put more white blood cells in there. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
and he was also doing it to make weight. They were taking blood out of him to make weight, and then they were adding extra blood in.
Idiots, man.
Fucking nuts.
You know, it's like that EPO shit, what they're doing right now also. You know, there's like your blood gets really thick, your heart rate gets really low. Mm-hmm. You have to, some of these guys have to wake up in the middle of the night, jump 10 minutes on a bike or you know, in the home, they have it in the bedroom, because otherwise the heart might stop beating. And I go, do you really want to get a title like that?
Yeah.
Plus, when you get your title and you cheated, what if you use steroids or anything and you get a title? How can you? I always tell these people, if I brush my teeth, I can look at myself in the mirror. I did everything without cheating, nothing ever in my body other than just good food.
Brushing your teeth?
Yeah, when you brush your teeth and you look at yourself in the mirror, you're going to go like, I was a cheater.
I was like, how competitive are you at teeth brushing? Taking steroids to brush your teeth?
Oh, hey, you know what? You're going to laugh. My wife laughs her ass off every time because my little daughter's the same as me, like movement-wise. She bounces all day long, ding, 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 you know, I'm dancing 11 o'clock at night. And when you hear her brushing her teeth, she goes, she's the same as me, puts a lot of power. I have the same thing.
She's going to wear off her enamel.
It's hilarious. You know, and the other ones, it's so cool when you see one room for my daughter. It's a garbage field. And the other one, it's like everything is perfect. Like the pen is perfectly on the paper.
It's funny how their personalities are different.
Yeah. It's the best.
I have one, my 2-year-old, that I think might be a lesbian. I don't have any problem with that, but my wife does. When I say she's a dyke, she goes and grabs, she goes and grabs like Batman and Spider-Man. She always wants to play with the Hulk. She wants to play with boys' toys.
So
she likes it.
Maybe she likes boys very much.
She sees me work out, so she comes over. She tries punching and kicking the bag. She's very aggressive.
Oh, it's like, the best.
Yeah, but the other one's like girly and princessy. So she's built different too. She has like thick ankles and shit. Probably a dyke.
You gotta see.
I have no problem with it. I love lesbians, man. My wife's like, don't say that. And I'm like, how can you?
Who cares?
Yeah, not only that, my wife has gay friends. She loves gay people.
Joe,
like, I don't know what
to do.
You know, I think you're the people with the less brain capacity, they have all problems with that. I truly believe. You know, like the transgender who's fighting, and they asked me last week. I said, who even cares?
I care
the guy
about
fight,
that.
You know?
They need to fight transgenders. If a transgender is going to fight, they need to fight other.
You think so, yeah?
Fuck yeah.
Why? Absolutely. You think he's going to get horny while he's...
No!
Right?
No,
that's what I mean.
No, physical, they have an advantage. The mechanical advantage of the male body. just tendons.
But so he fights girls.
Yes.
No, I didn't. I didn't know that. Yeah. No, no, no. Okay. I thought he fought guys.
No.
Oh girls. No. That's that. No, no, no. That's
fucked
BS.
Up, right?
Yeah, of course. He's got testosterone. Yeah. Come on.
Meanwhile, the International Olympic Committee, if you've been a transgender, if you've cut off within 2 years. I think after two years, they allow you to compete against women in Taekwondo.
No.
Yes, in Taekwondo.
No. See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous.
No, I thought just fighting with guys. I said, come on, no. You know, I don't care. But
well, with guys, they would get killed. Without the testosterone, they'd get killed. You get your balls cut off and then fight against guys, you're going to get killed. There's a famous Muay Thai fighter who was a ladyboy. Who fought really well.
They call her Lady Boy also. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And then she got the operation and then she started getting knocked out because once she got the operation and became a woman, she didn't have testosterone anymore. So
wow.
Then she started really getting fucked up. But it's still, you might not be able to beat men after you get your dick cut off,
but you still
can beat women.
Yep.
The tendons, the ligaments, the bone density, especially because she's not just like walking around. She's training for MMA.
Yep.
So like she has a male body that she's training for MMA. And I looked at her and she's so bulky, man. I'm like, man, I can't believe that this chick is not taking something. If she has no balls anymore, how's she keeping this much muscle mass? I mean, she looks like a muscular man.
Yeah.
It's gross. It's
fucking
craziness.
That's not cool. Fight other guys. Then I'm okay with it.
How did you feel about that whole Cyborg thing when Cyborg tested positive for steroids?
Well,
you don't know who that is, folks. Cyborg is one of the scariest women fighters, and she's a real woman, but she's very masculine and very muscular, and she tested positive.
Well, she says she didn't do it. I get it when people say that, but I nobody was in shock, right?
Right.
But the way she looks. Yeah. She looks indeed like she's doing. I mean, the way after the fight when she was throwing up her husband at the time, they're divorced now, you know, it was like, whoa, she is abnormal strong.
She looks like a man on steroids.
Yeah, she was so, it was, you know, it was not a big surprise. But I always say, you know, if they say no and they say no, I got to, you know, you have to believe them. I think it's it will be very sad, but that's me. I could not lie like that. I could not live in a lie like that. If I have to lie about that, then my whole life is a lie now suddenly. So
well,
I say, okay.
Here's the reality. The reality is she came from a Brazilian camp known for aggressive fighters that may or may not have taken substances as well. So there's that issue, right? That's legit and inescapable. And then two, she tested positive.
Yep.
And once you test positive, I mean, it's essentially, why would we believe you any other? You look like you're on steroids. And you test positive for steroids.
Yep.
That is just as much of an issue to me as a transgender woman or a man who used to be a woman.
Well, when you said it with the transgender, you heard now with the ovary. I read that last week with the injury. I heard something on the day of Inside MMA. They said, oh, it was an injury. I truly believe the reason, because his testosterone was 180.
Are you talking about Alistair Overeem?
Alistair Overeem's testosterone level was
179.
So low. 179. Yeah. So I thought that was the reason he was not going to fight in Nevada, because Keith Geiser had said prior usage, you know, and that's the reason. That's why he cannot fight.
Okay, I got to explain everything.
Yeah,
to
this is hard.
Yes. what we're talking about is testosterone use exemption, a TUE for testosterone replacement therapy. It's a very controversial issue now with MMA fighters where they're taking testosterone because the body doesn't produce it as much anymore. And there's two reasons for that. There's three, actually. One is just the natural aging process. During a natural aging process, once you get over 30, your body starts producing less and less testosterone.
Well, yeah, I would say 45 maybe.
Well, no, it's slowly.
Yeah, slowly yeah, but
after
you don't
30.
Need it.
You don't need it. No, you certainly don't need it. But the true issue, though, is when guys have taken steroids in the past, they take them for prolonged periods of time, and then it kills their balls. And so then they test really low. And that's most likely what's going on with Alistair.
And then Keith Geiser said if they find out that your prior usage, because Alistair was caught before, this is for the listeners at home, you know, by using testosterone, then they says, okay, you cannot get it. And since the fight was in Vegas, I thought, oh, that is the reason. But then on the day of the show, they said, oh, no, he just released. It was his hamstring. And so when I said this story, I said, well, I thought it was that testosterone deal he was with. People right away, because I said something about Alistair like over a year and a half ago or something, they go like, oh, it's only because he left Golden Glory and, you know, all that stuff. I go, dude, I grew over it. You grow over it. I don't have a problem with it. I'm just saying what I read this week, you know, and I thought was the reason he couldn't compete in Nevada because Keith Geiser's there.
For folks who don't know what the fuck we're talking about, testosterone is it's a huge controversial issue now. Vitor Belfort is another example of it, because Keith Kaiser has said that because of the fact that he tested positive for steroids in 2006, I believe it was. I think it was when Pride
was in Vegas, right?
Yeah. He fought against Dan Henderson. When you test positive for steroids, they won't, if you have a, you know, any history of doing that, they assume that the reason why your test is low is because you ruined your body, and if that's the case, you're on your own because you cheated.
Yep.
If you have a real medical condition for why your testosterone is low, then they'll grant exemptions, and they've granted them for Forrest Griffin and a bunch of other guys, Dan Henderson.
He's 42 years old or something. Yes. You know, now we're talking age here. But a guy who's 30, under 35, and he should not have low testosterone. He should not.
Unless he's got a medical condition.
Yeah. You know, I had guys that they were looking at me and they said, no, and I really need it. And I go, dude, I remember you when you were 25, your back full of zits, you were freaking huge. Now you're fighting at 155, and now you want an exemption because, oh, no, I have something with my colon or whatever they say. I say, you know what the reason is. Don't be here lying to me now, you know.
But nobody ever wants to admit my balls don't work because I took roids.
Too much, yeah.
But so like Vitor, who's active in the UFC and he's doing really well, just knocked out Michael Bisping, and now he's going to fight again. He's going to fight in Brazil. He's got to – he can never fight in Vegas now.
No, that's what I said also in our show. I gave the example of Alistair, and I said – because he said the same thing with Vitor Belfort. And, of course, they attacked me with, oh, you're all against Alistair because you left Golden Glory. No, everybody's the same. You know, when I said he had a glass jaw, I didn't say that – now, look, if he was really close as a friend, I wouldn't mention it. You know, many people need to know. But then, you know, otherwise I say it. I said about Cain Velasquez. I love Cain Velasquez. I think he's a great fighter. But, he's not a super strong Chen, you know, but he's an unbelievable fighter. You can see what he can do. You know, I mean, he took it to Junior Dos Santos. So
that was an amazing fight.
Is this fight going to happen now? Because I don't know anymore. Is it Junior versus Hunt? Is that on?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's going to be amazing? A hard fight for Junior,
yes,
man.
Yes, man. Yeah, I love when guys like you hear about that fight and go, oh, fuck you, Junior. You don't know, man.
No, he is. Because Hunt, you can't knock him out, dude.
He is a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Well, you can't knock him out. I mean, Melvin knocked him out.
Did you see that fight?
Yeah.
Okay, watch the fight in slow motion. Mm-hmm. I bet you, because we all wear steel cups in Holland, right?
Right.
He knocks him down, yes. He falls forward, but Hunt falls on his cup. Watch. You see him, boom, hitting the cup, and then he flies down. I go... I guarantee you the extra, the steel cup, sealed the deal.
Steel dick cage.
But I remember Mirko Krokop kicking him with his freaking shin in the face, and he just took a knee. No, the first time he didn't flinch at all, and the second time he took a knee and he got up like freaking Terminator, and he kept going.
Super Samoan.
Scary guy, man.
Yeah, he can bang.
Oh.
He can bang.
Did you see that break? It was right on the spot, eh? Right on the spot where he hit that hook.
Yeah.
That overhand.
He's a way more experienced striker than anybody else in the UFC.
Yeah.
Except the only thing guys in on his level as far as experience is Alistair, because he's the only other guy that won the Grand Prix.
Yep.
And Alistair won the Grand Prix clean, whereas Hunt won it because that crazy fight he had with Ray Sefo, and then Ray Sefo couldn't continue, so he went and he took Ray Sefo's place and won it, right?
No, he did. But I got to say, Saki normally, because I heard when they spar, you know, I know who's had
Gokhan Saki?
Yeah, but over him. And Saki went in that fight in the finals with a broken hand and a broken arm.
Right.
You know, so that would be a great fight between the two of those. When both are healthy.
Yeah.
You know,
love the fact that that K1, well, it's not really K1 as much as it is Glory now, and you know, there's just been more high level kickboxing on television these days. It's really coming back.
It's a great show. It really is a great show, you know, and such high level strikers. I was here at the airport there, the casino they have there somewhere, you know, on Century. I was there about 4 weeks ago. There was a Glory show. And I was amazed with the talent they had here. Like, I was truly amazed. The kickboxing talent coming from America.
Yeah.
And that was not in the past like this, you know?
No.
And these guys looked really good.
Well, I think MMA has fed it to the point where everybody realized how important Muay Thai skills are to win in MMA. And then more people started gravitating towards Muay Thai.
Yep.
And then, you know, I think we're seeing, when you see the highest level, like you see like a Giorgio Petrosian or someone like that, like a real high level technical guy, like you realize like, wow, the level of striking, which is probably the most entertaining and exciting part of MMA, the level of striking is way higher in like high level kickboxing than it is in MMA right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Way higher.
No, for sure.
Like Anderson, I think could compete in high level kickboxing.
No,
I
he
think-
got a, you know, still some of the high kicks, like his knees and he's crazy, like front kicks and timing in his hands are specifically really good.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's got a really good roundhouse kick to the head. I never really see him make that.
Yushin Okami.
Like in a.
He blasted Yushin in the first round.
That was the UFC. Yeah, that's true. Okay, good.
Roundhouse kicked him in the face, stunned him, then the bell rang, and then he finished him off in the next round.
Yeah, and against Chill, he threw it from a weird angle, I thought. And I go like, whoa, that. But I think it was just he was too excited to fight Chill, and he really wanted to knock him out, you know. And that's when you start making those little, like, mistakes.
That fight with the Stefan Bonner fight was the most brutal version of Anderson Silva. That was incredible.
That was – Literally, there was a moment in my life that my mouth was open, that was the moment. When he just moved back, move, and he goes, poof.
Pressed against the cage.
Dunk. Yeah. I go, holy
and he stopped him with that knee.
No. With Stefan Bonner, of course, in Brazil. Forrest Griffin. Forrest Griffin was, that was, in my mind, that was like just unbelievable. It was the most amazing thing ever.
He manhandled him.
So moving, letting miss, and then go bonk, and right on that button, you know, so beautiful.
He's so accurate. Do you think he's the best ever?
You know, yeah, he's up there. Fedor, I still put up there also. I cannot, all these great fights we saw at Pride, he's got to be up there, man. He right now, I mean, who can stop him?
Fedor in his prime, like the Nogueira days when he beat Nogueira, he was unbelievable. When he beat Krokop, you know? He was so good back then.
Just beating everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and the way he did it, so calm.
I would love to see a prime Fedor versus a prime Cain Velasquez.
Yeah.
You know, if we could go back in time with Cain, take the Cain of today and bring him back and fight Fedor. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
That would have been an amazing fight.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, we're so lucky now to see this evolution of shit. And Cain is another one of those guys that just, you know, he's got a full skill set. Throws leg kicks, head kicks, punches, you know.
And the stamina, I love that. Yeah. Although in the Junior Dos Santos fight, he started running out of gas also, you know. Not with his pace, but the strength got away, you know. Yeah. The ground and pound was not effective anymore, not to knock him out.
We threw 100 million punches.
Oh, man. No, but he's insane. Yeah, what heavyweight. And everybody goes... One guy told me one time, I said, yeah, but I'm heavyweight. I said, well, look at Cain Velasquez. And he goes, yeah, but he trains really hard. And I go, really, dude?
Yeah.
Well, that's the answer. You just gave it to yourself.
Well, just like train you really hard. He's a relatively small heavyweight. He's a little heavier than you at about 240. But realistically, Cain, when you look at him, he carries more body fat as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting how it seems like that's about as big as you need to get. Like those big 265 pound guys that cut weight and get you almost sacrifice something. When
you do
that
always,
big.
Always. And I think that Cain has that burning inside from his family. You know what they showed on TV when they did those specials on him, and he wants to provide for his family. He's got that all. You know, his old father working hard, and he's got that mentality. And I think a guy like that, you know, that is a hard guy to beat.
Yeah,
and he will always be. Ready. That punch with Junior Dos Santos the first time, I thought Cain was going to beat him exactly the way as he did the second time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought, oh, he's going to outwork him. But Junior never had anybody pressing as hard as Cain can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going to outwork him in the championship rounds. Probably he might seal the deal there. But then he got hit with that crazy overhead.
Also that, I mean, you can't say take anything away from Junior. Junior's a vicious knockout striker.
He knocked Krokop out. He knocked everybody. For Doom out, everybody, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an animal.
Yeah, he really is. That Verdum knockout was brutal.
Yep.
But the difference being that Cain Velasquez was injured in that fight. I mean, he had a pretty serious knee injury.
I heard that also.
Pretty serious knee injury. Like, he couldn't move.
And then your focus will be on that injury.
Of course.
It's always like that.
Yeah, so he wasn't able to really, you know, like, attack and have the mobility that he likes. I mean, the second fight, it was all about him moving forward.
That's it. Taking away the striking.
And it puts that pace on you.
Nobody can stop that. You know Matt Horwitz, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has almost no striking skills, but he is tough and he's got stamina.
Yeah.
You know, when he fought Mike Pyle, I never forget this. He beat Mike Pyle with a combination on the ground and he sunk him into a submission, which blew me away. You know, but he outworked him. Yeah. You know, he just got him tired. And then later I overheard him talking. And then Horwitz says, he's like freaking, Rain Man. You know, he said, Yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that you did it 4 years ago. I was rolling with you, and you did that to me, so I knew that was what the counter was going to be.
Oh, and I go, what? He knew. He remembered from 4 years ago.
Well, he's a strange cat, Matt Horwich. He's a great guy too. A beautiful human being.
He loves to. Cutting weight is fasting for him.
Yeah.
He says, "Oh, I love to fast. Love the trees, the flowers.
Yeah. Well, I love the universe and all of its potential possibilities in the multiverse." Like if you hear him talk,
gotta love this guy.
But he's a sweetheart of a guy and very, very, very tough guy too. I mean, and knocked out Benji Raddick with a head kick.
Unbelievable!
You know? How crazy was that fight?
Unbelievable. But again, outworking. And I always tell these examples. He makes the best, most technical fighters in the world makes him look like crap.
Yep.
Because why? He can take a punch and he just comes forward.
Yep.
And you can be a great striker. You cannot strike moving backwards. Mm-hmm. If you really push it, you shut down the whole striking. And that's how you fight a great striker.
And Matt Horwich is an interesting guy because he's not burdened down with ego.
Nope.
You know, I think a lot of guys with all their macho bullshit, like you talk a lot of shit before a fight, you carry that around with you. Like that becomes like a weight that you carry. When you get inside that cage,
when you say I'm gonna rip his head off, shit in his neck, and go, you know those kind of things, you have to understand that at the moment you have to go to the fight, they play that clip on the big screen, and you see yourself saying that, and now you're gonna go, I better do it.
Yeah.
And that's, boom, right away weight on your shoulders. You should never do that. That's why I never did stare downs. I don't like to get angry. I don't want them to make. I like to say little things in interviews that piss them off. So hopefully they get really angry at me. Like the whole thing with Kimo Leopoldo, I never asked for him, you know. But they set that up. I went to the photo shoot for my last fight. Was at the WFA. And he was there, and I said, "Hey, Kimo, how are you doing?" And he shook my hand, and he looked right away, and I go, "Wow." I go to Jeremy Lab, and I say, "Wow, he's taking this fight serious, right?" And he says, "Yeah, we told him that you specifically asked for him." I say, "Why would you say that?" "Well, that gets him, you know, it gets him a little angry. It's better for the fight." And I go, "Okay." So I figured I'm not going to say anything, because then at least he will train very hard, you know, we're going to get a good fight. But he always thought that I specifically asked for him. I didn't. They say, "Who you want to fight?" I say, "Hickson." And they say, "Why?" I said, "Well, they always said he's the best, so I would like to test my skill." He said, "No, we don't have the money for that."
How much money would it have cost for you to fight Hickson Gracie?
Now?
How much would it back then?
I would have, for the same thing, I would have fought.
To fight
Hickson, what, for the
same
thing?
They said they couldn't afford him. They said they couldn't afford
him. Oh, for
Hickson.
Him. Okay. Yeah. For me, it was $250 at the time.
How much would they pay Hickson? How much did Hickson want?
I think $6 million or something. Something high. Something, I don't know, but I heard really great. You know, whatever you read on the internet, we know by now. Don't believe it. But no, a really high number. But I just thought, you know, I would love to, because I have nothing, you know, Hickson and I, we met in China. Everything's cool. You know, there's nothing going on, because he's a really nice guy.
For folks who don't know who's talking about, Royce Gracie won the very first UFC, and Royce Gracie, who's a brilliant Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, who really kind of exposed Brazilian jiu-jitsu to America and showed it to us, showcased it. His brother was the champion of the family. His brother, apparently, by all accounts, is the greatest Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist ever.
Yep.
And everybody who rolls with him pretty much universally says this, that Hickson is just on this other level. So you wanted to fight him, huh?
Just for that. I would go on the ground. I would like, because at that time I thought, I just want to see.
Well,
you in Japan,
in Pancrase, when you won the King of Pancrase, he had also won Japan Valley Tudo, like within a year of that, right?
He was sitting there when I was in the Budokan, knocked the guy out, and that was at the time when they were on the cover of Black Belt magazine saying that, Pancrase this. So I, you know, needless to say, I say, okay, then I want to test the skills. And that's where I actually challenged him. I said, hey, I would like to fight you. I don't mind the rules. We'll bend the rules. We'll make any rule anytime.
And what happened?
You know, it never happened. You know,
were you trying to do it for pride? Is that what you were trying to do?
No, well, in Pancrase was that, but I said, I don't mind any organization anywhere. You know, I let this fight happen.
And he didn't
Once I put the fans to the side to care about for fighting, you know, if you really as a fighter go in fighting for yourself, it doesn't really matter. I always told my guys like this, if they put me with Randy Couture in this room, they lock the room and we fight, it doesn't really matter who wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's better at the game, he wins. If I'm better, I'm winning. You know, it doesn't. But what is hard for a fighter is to come out and all these people know, and then Chris Lieben said it very funny one time at our show. He says, yeah, the guy at Blockbuster told me what I should have done when I fought Anderson Silva, you know? And then I say, yeah. You see, but a lot of fighters care about that.
Right.
I always say, the fighters always say, yeah, I fight for my family. Wrong. Right away. Fight for yourself, man. For your fight. And fight. If you fight for yourself, you fight the best. If you really don't give a damn about anybody, what they think, you fight really the best because it's not bad to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody can have that day. That's the mindset I had with Hicks. And, you know, although I thought I was going to beat him, but I would say, you know, it doesn't really matter. This is testing the skill against somebody who everybody thinks is the best guy in the world. I would love to test that. That was the only thing.
That was one of the things that Randy always said that I found very admirable, that he would say that to his fighters when they were going out to fight. He would say, even if you lose, the worst thing in the world is you lose, and you'll be fine. You still have your friends, you still have your loved ones. Get that out of your head. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about losing, because sometimes if you concentrate on not losing, you can't see what you're doing. Like, yeah, well, you can't relax.
I say it different. I say, as long as you fight,
yes,
you cannot lose. You go to Japan. I had Vernon Tiger White lost a whole bunch of fights in a row. And there was a row of people waiting for him to get autographs. And these people, but he fought.
Right.
You know, now if you're on the ground.
Japanese fan mentality is very different as well, right?
But if you lay on the ground and somebody lifts his arm for ground and pound and you tap, you'll never be back in Japan. They'll boo you.
Right.
Then they get vicious, you know?
Right.
And that's what I tell my students, as long as you fight. You know, if you leave everything out there, you know, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. You know, to me, you can never lose.
Well, and also,
You're
always involved in improving yourself. You're a work in progress.
That's right.
And until you find those great fighters who are better than you, you don't realize what you need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And you show me a guy who, you know, I forget who made this quote, but I put it on Twitter the other day. I retweeted it yesterday. Show me someone who hasn't made mistakes, and I'll show you someone who hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's like you have to get beat in order to really understand, first of all, how much it sucks to lose, and that will motivate you more.
Yep.
The guys that are always problematic are the guys that are super talented, that win easy, that don't have to train hard, and then someday someone catches up to them.
And they lose. If they lose, it's always stamina. You watch.
Yeah. True.
Because
true.
They beat everybody in the gym, dominate everybody, and once you fight on your own pace, you never get tired. You can fight for 2 hours. But if you have that guy that pushes and you interrupts your breathing pattern, that's what I always say. You know, that's the moment. You know, if somebody hits a back, I'm standing behind him, I'll kick him out of the blue to the body. Not to knock him out. You know why I do that? I do that so he has to flex at that particular moment and it interrupts his breathing pattern. And that's why you're getting tired.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not kicking hard. I'm just making him aware. Oh, he does this. You know, and now it's all, you know, he interrupted it. And that's how you get tired.
Well, that's also the issue with Nick Diaz, right? With all his pat, pat, pat punches that you never can breathe. You never get a chance to take a break and relax.
Yeah, he's this guy who just flies through everything.
Now, what do you think about that fight that's coming up this weekend? Nick Diaz is fighting George St. Pierre. Johnny Hendricks is fighting Carlos Condit. And Jake Ellenberger is fighting Nate Marquardt. It's great fucking fights, man.
That's going to be a really good show. It's a hard one. You think if GSP plays his game, what he normally does, he's a really good wrestler. We know he can take him down.
Uh-huh.
But Nick has to be on the ground. He has to outwork him. He needs to fight if he gets taken down to get back up. And if he keeps fighting, George is going to need to spend a lot of energy. Now, it's going to be hometown for George. There's a lot of pressure on his shoulders, a lot of people don't want to lose, you know, so that that pressure maybe already took care of a little bit of his stamina, you know, took a little 20% away. The more the pressure, the more stamina is getting taken away from you. You know, he needs to be super, super relaxed. And if he doesn't let him to be super relaxed and constantly escapes and fights the takedown and fight back to get up, you know, then that might be a trouble for George. But the way George was fighting last time against Condit, man, I love that George. That's the guy I want to see again, the guy who he was working, and he was working hard. And that's what he needs to do with Diaz, but he needs to stay out of the guard preferably. I would say, half guard, you know, and if you're going to guard squat, don't let him close the guard. That's going to be a problem for you. Constantly from half guard squatted, ground and pound. Playing the jiu-jitsu game on the ground, I don't know if it's a smart thing to do with Nick.
Yeah, Nick has a hell of a guard. I mean, we saw that in the Cyborg fight, tap Cyborg off his back.
I mean, with the freaking Gogo Plata.
Yeah, the Gomi fight. Yeah, he's very underrated, I think. I think he's got a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills that we rarely see, because over the past couple of years, he's been beating guys up on the feet.
That's it. And now George has to overcome that reach, that long hand constantly peppering, mm-hmm. peppering. But I think he will shoot straight through it.
You think so?
You know, yeah. I think that Nate, maybe if he would work really hard on a knee to the face, on a takedown, because right. I think the takedown will be there anyway, because he's such a good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be hard to stop him, but can he still stop him in the championship rounds if it goes in there, you know?
Well, and the question is going to be, well, is he going to try to stop him, or is he going to try to pull guard? Is he going to try to roll with it and just lock up a good position right away, like he did with Gomi, or, mm-hmm. you know, like he did with Cyborg? He has a very nasty guard. I mean, Nick Diaz is a high-level black belt.
Yep.
And that fucking stamina, man, that's a big deal, too.
That's the thing. You know, if you fight a guy like that, you know, what did I say? Fatigue makes cowards out of men. And, yeah. and it really is. We all been there. You know that you're really tired. I had it in a fight, and I go, oh, my God, I hope. And thankfully, I knocked him out with a knee to the liver. But I was really about to stop almost, you know. You everything sinks away.
Yeah.
You know, I was sick also. But, I mean, it starts with stamina and fatigue. And then when you see him still going strong, that's a mental crusher, man. And that's the thing that GSP now has. He knows that whatever happens, he's not going to run out of gas, Nick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nick's not going to run out of gas. But you know what? George has always been very good well conditioned as well. You know, it's interesting how many fighters get sick before fights. It's a huge issue. I always had it with the Taekwondo days. I'd get sick from nerves.
But I think also a lot is the cutting weight.
Yes, is that? But it's also just hard training.
Yeah,
and not watching their diet.
You
not
see, I never had that. I brought my own food. I brought my own loaf of bread and all that stuff. I was not going to get food poisoning. Forget about it. I brought my own water. You know, you heard all these stories in Japan that they would something in your water. I didn't want to take a risk. If whether it's through a myth or not, I don't care. I'll bring my own water. Nobody's going to touch it, you know? And at least I could have the dumbest thing, and that those are guys who go the day before, go to a McDonald's sushi place somewhere, you know, and they're going to eat like bad sushi. They go, it's food poisoning. You're an idiot.
Yeah.
That's part of your training. You should not have done that.
Why take that risk? Yeah.
It's the dumbest thing you can do. It's like the guys with the bad mouthpiece. You know, but when I saw car operation fight with the mouthpiece that fell out the whole time, you know, that drives me nuts. That should be a penalty for that. You know, constantly fall out. It's like, who does that? You're a professional fighter. You need a good mouthpiece, right?
Yeah, yeah. Are you still training fighters on a regular basis?
You know, it's hard now because I had that neck surgery. Mm-hmm. And last week I did two sets of push-ups, 18 push. Imagine I did 120 for fun back in the day. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm so weak. And then after 2 days, I lost all power. So I know there is something that when it swells up or it flares up, it stops my nerves from getting in. And tomorrow I'm going to find out, tomorrow 10:45 in the morning, I'm going to find out in the nerve conducting test where that blockage is. And I think once they can open that up, then everything's going
to
be just
fine. So you're going to have another operation.
I don't know. Maybe they say, oh, well, it's rest or this, or maybe they do an epidural there, right on the spot that will loosen it up, something like that. But my nerve in my neck jumped from below 30%. He said when we opened your neck, it jumped back same level as your other one, 100%.
You've been dealing with this for years now.
Years now. It's a nightmare. But, you know, I used to be a crazy guy training. It's kind of my own stuff. You know, I was talking to people, world champions, and they would teach, what did they say? They go hard on Fridays, 70%. And I go, and what do you do for the rest? They said, well, we train. I said, you spar one day a week. Yeah, and I started laughing. I said, but you mean? I said, I spar two times a day, and we go hard. I'll try to knock you out to your legs and your body, and you do it to me. And on the hat, of course, I'm not going to knock him out, but I got the control for that. But we go.
Right.
You know, that's why I never had a ring rust. When I came back in 2006, you know, I didn't fight for 6 years.
Right.
But I had no problem because two times a day we have a fight.
Right.
That's what we're doing. So I felt great.
What about the wear and tear, though, from doing that?
That's the thing. What I advise to every fighter now is that always get the right equipment. Make sure you're packed in. Make sure your ankles are taped. Things like that, because with the shin protection, now they got really good shin protection that has also, you know, with the instep, they have protection there now, you know, so that cannot be hurt like when you kick an elbow.
Right.
And those are bad injuries the whole time, you know. Watch out. Just pack yourself in. Make a good mouthpiece. Get a professional mouthpiece done.
Right.
It's insane. Put grease on your way down. Watch for cuts. Play everything safe.
Now, when you have guys training, though, do you have them spar that same way, twice a day, you know, going all out to the
head? We have people coming in with us, and they want to spar on Sundays, and they turn around when they see him spar. They go like, but that started since Carlo, Ramon Dekas' brother, came to teach at my gym. And he says, "No, we're going to spar like we do in Holland." And that's the way we used to do it.
And so that's what he's got going on down
yeah,
there?
Yeah, but all the guys are already used to it.
Wow.
They just don't care. They just go. But they have the right equipment. As long as you have the right equipment, that you don't get beat.
Now, where is your gym's in Thousand Oaks, right?
Yeah, it's on Hampshire Road, 880 Hampshire Road.
What is the website if people want to get some information about that?
EliteMMAGym.com.
And so you have Ramon Decker's brother is teaching down there
He's
now?
Teaching there, yeah. Wow. He's like a long time in the business, been there for his whole career, teaches all those holds of focus bits of, and tie pads for all the top guys, Overeem, Peter Erz, Musashi. I mean, all these guys have been there, you know. So he's a really great coach.
What is his name?
Carlo Deckers.
Carlo Deckers, wow. And when is he there? What day of the week?
Well, he's there every day. Now he's still in Holland because the funeral was a couple of days ago. And I didn't even ask him. I told him, you know, take whatever time you need and to wrap things up there. Because he was very close to Ramon. They were like, two peas in a pie, man. That was very hard for him.
It's crazy that he had a heart attack riding a bike. I mean, think about all the fights that guy had.
And also, you know, we're talking about 240 fights or something, you know. And this guy, it's fighting with a broken hand and a broken foot at the same time, and he would keep fighting. You know, the guy was just indestructible, and also living a clean, healthy lifestyle now for the last 6 years. Also, you know, like being in shape. You know, he had this whole everything planned out. He has this children foundation that he set up in Thailand for these kids who had no future, and he would give them money, and all that stuff is now, you know, still going to happen. There's now a T-shirt coming. MMA Bloodlines is going to make a T-shirt. 100% goes to the family or to their charity. So they're working on a lot of things to keep his name out there, of course.
Wow. It's fucked up. A guy can just be that great a fighter and an athlete and just have a heart attack at 43 and just drop dead.
It's the wildest thing ever. You know, since he passed away, I drank 1.5 glass of wine. And normally I drink 2 glasses a night or 2.
You drop maybe it back? 3.
Right away I go, oh my God, this is really scary. He was healthy.
Yeah.
He was good. There was nothing in his family who, you know, bad hearts, nothing. Just out of the blue. So that really freaked me out.
Yeah, well, it's got to be freaking you out with all this nerve shit going on with your body.
Yeah,
well,
once this comes back. You know, I've been always blessed with all that kind of stuff. It heals fast. And I think it comes because of my eczema that I had, really bad eczema, so I was recouping fast. If I had wounds in training, like a wound that would be literally 2 days, you couldn't tell it was there. It would go so fast because that was what my skin was doing 24/7, you know. So now I'm blessed with having that. But my neck, that's annoying. That doesn't really, you know, those blockages, it's here. I can feel it. It's lumps.
And what is a blockage? Is it scar tissue?
A muscle spasm is what they say, what stops the nerves from getting in my arm, and that's why, look, it's all thin. It doesn't fill up yet. Yet. It will start happening.
And they said because of what you've done by fusing the neck, it's alleviated some of the pressure? Is that what they did?
It jumped back right away to 100%. That's what they said.
So it's disturbing to me how many people have back issues. I mean, it's so disturbing. There's so many guys who have fucked up backs. It's really crazy, man.
My shit's fucked up right now, but it's just because I got 3 massages in one day, which never do that ever.
Yeah, that's not a good
thing. That's just sore. You're talking about muscles. Yeah. You know, the issue that these fighters are having is a lot different than you, pal.
Yeah.
The wear and tear on the body is just fucking unbelievable. It's brutal.
You look at Tito Ortiz. It's no time to recoup also.
Yeah.
You know, I had, when I was preparing for that last fight, I had 2 times a week off. I had only 10 weeks for that fight. I didn't train for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I had 10 weeks to get in shape, and 2 weeks from that I didn't.
You didn't train at all for 3 years?
No, not at all. I since my last fight, I think I worked out maybe 25 times. That's in 2006.
Wow.
Yeah, that will be at the end because I started training again, and my God, I feel really good. Like in 4 weeks, I was actually, people always think that I just say something and then it's not true. I say, the boss, the body action system, I use that myself. The O2 trainer, I use it myself. The workout, I use it myself. And they go, yeah, you're just saying that. I go, wait a minute. I can go back on my security camera and you can actually see me training in the backyard. So I went back on the security camera and I got it for a month back and I was training only for 5 weeks. And at the beginning, you see me, I'm struggling, man. I think 2-minute round, it's really bad. But the amazing, if you see like 7 workouts further, it's a whole different. Suddenly, the screen for the O2 trainer went from 3 to 7, which is a heavy setting already. I had 10-pound ankle weights, heavy gloves. I put weights in there also hitting. And
you
then
put
one day,
in your gloves?
Yeah, yeah. But I watch out with hyperextending then when I do that. You know, or I hit that boss thing, so I don't hyperextend. But it's good for the burn and for everything to get tired. And then I threw one time in the air something, I think, and I hyperextended, and it was just from one day to the other, my hand dropped. And I go, oh, God, it's back. And that was it. And that was in October, and then they did the surgery in January. But
so
what
you
happened,
were getting yourself back in shape.
I was, and it was going really well. I started feeling great already. I mean, you watch, it's online. It's on the O2trainerblog.com. You can find a video there.
And your neck, when the first operation, they didn't fuse the discs. What did they do?
They made the holes around the nerves a little bigger, but it was still a little squeezing, so it was only on 30% working, and I knew that because
it was herniated discs? Is that what
yeah.
it was?
Yeah. But they only were like 30% or a little bit less. Mm-hmm. And I knew that because I could, like, with 10 pounds, I did like 25 reps. Still very weak because I used to do way more with that. But that makes sense with the 25, the 30%. I'd go, okay. But then what happened in the training, I think something – that's when the jam happened here.
Now, knowing what you know and all this experience that you have, especially all this experience with your body, like, breaking down – What do you tell fighters to do now? I mean, what do you advise them? How do you to not do what you did that was wrong?
Stretch, man, stretch yeah. a lot. I would stretch. I would make that one of my primary things. You know, watching TV, just stretch while you're watching TV. Get right. those stretch bands. Do you know
yoga?
While you're watching TV, you're busy with it. It doesn't really matter. And good food. Don't dehydrate yourself. And once you start dehydrating yourself, stretch even more, man, because that's where your tendons get dehydrated, everything. They rip faster. You see a lot of that also happening close to a fight. They start dehydrating and they make a kick and they pull a hamstring, you know. And that's exactly because of that reason. You're dehydrating yourself. Those tendons need to stay moist, you know. You need to keep it good and watch out.
And as far as like what you, the kind of therapy that you're doing right now for your back, do you do any inversion therapy or any anything where they're trying to do any sort of traction?
No, I have these two hooks, so to say, in my hand, and I have on the stairs to go to the second floor with us. I hang.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hang and I stretch my arms out, and that seems to help. Like last week, I could do three with 5 pounds, three reps, 5 pounds.
Wow.
And then I started stretching and I start mentally focusing. Somebody told me just force it to be gone and then visualize how you can get rid of it. I start doing that, and then yesterday evening I did 10. So and that was just in 4 days, but I've been also hanging.
How many of the guys you run into that have these issues?
Yeah, lots. A lot of guys have the Benji Raddick, Tito Ortiz.
Benji Raddick has a back issue as well?
Yeah, he had a big neck, also lost everything. He lost his pec, so I believe that's a C7 or 8 or something, I think. I don't know how that exact works. With me, it's biceps and shoulder. My shoulder starts coming back now because that nerve goes over here over the top. That's good. I see the muscle start getting there, so that's good. But for the biceps, and I get this carpal tunnel that I already had but never was a problem with me. But now because the nerve, it is a problem. So now I can, if I grab things, my whole hand spasms, you know. It's really weird. Before demonstrations, I always say, guys, you see that? It's not like I'm not crazy. It's just my hand shoots suddenly. Like that. And like when I grab something, it's really weird. My wife started noticing because I was sitting like this the whole time. She says, what's wrong with your hands?
Twisting.
And I get it.
Like, you can't open it up?
Yeah.
Wow. That's got to be like, for a dude who's this bad motherfucker, former UFC champion, that's got to be really like disturbing.
It is. It is really disturbing. I don't like to see myself as weak. I started biking now because that I can do with my knees now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm actually going to get a nicer bike now. So I got the
because you had knee issues as well.
Oh, yeah, I have no cartilage on my kneecaps.
Oh, Jesus!
And there's nothing they can do for that. Now I know everybody's going to email. Oh, I know this doctor. No, if you go to a real surgeon, they will tell you there's nothing they can do when you have no cartilage on your kneecaps. The only thing they cannot fix, actually, Alatrash at the Curlin Job told me that's the reason why the mafiosos break your kneecaps. It's infixable. You can't. And the bolt. Now, if I had patches out, they can regrow my own cartilage. That you can order that with stem cells, and they can, and that grows itself. Like it, they explain it like mat of grass. When pieces are out, you put pieces of grass in there, and that goes with the other grass, and it's strong again. That's how cartilage works. He says, but if you have none, there's no way they can attach it to your kneecap. Now, there is something they can do. They have to drill a hole and attach it in a Teflon plate, which will work, but then your kneecap is 35% weaker, more chance of breaking. And once it breaks, you're really done. You know. So he said, it will come. They will find something in a couple of years. But right now, walking stairs, getting up, sitting down, up or down walking, everything hurts. Everything hurts.
My friend Steve has his knees. He was on the U.S. ski team. He's had, like, I don't know, some insane amount of knee surgeries, more than 20 knee surgeries.
Whoa.
Yeah, and he has he had no cartilage in his knees as well. And he's got these steel plates that are over the tops of his joint, like where the cartilage used to be. They resurfaced it.
Yeah, what they do, they go with lasers in, and then it bleeds out, right? And they can do that too. But with me, it's the kneecap. Like with you, they're standing on each other. That's it. The kneecap, when I stretch my leg and I bend it, it already moved again. So whatever they attach it, it's in constant motion. You can't do anything. Like between the knees, between your upper leg and your lower leg, yeah, there's stuff that they can put in between, resurface, and they do that. What is it? They let you bleed. They let you bleed your own blood. You know, nobody lets me bleed my own blood. What movie was it again? Dodgeball or something, right? Yeah. But they drill these holes in the knees and it starts bleeding and that serves. Oh, like that. Wow, yeah.
That's my friend's knee. That's where you see the
but
top
I can see where
knee.
The kneecap goes through. I can tell that and where the other one go on top. But the kneecap, it's, you know, maybe on that other stuff I can put something like that on the other bones, not on the kneecap.
Well, that is his kneecap.
Yeah, one piece,
yeah,
but not all three.
Yeah, well, that's the bottom piece and then the top piece and where the cartilage used to be. Look at this, Brian. Have you seen that?
That is crazy. Where did he do this?
Well, Steve's at the cutting edge because he's a doctor himself, so he's well aware of what
Let me – I need his number.
See, that's – you just pop the thing out. That's for the folks at home who can see it. He's he's happy with it. Also, you can see lower as I scroll down a bit. You see that white thing? That white thing is artificial meniscus. So he's got the double. He's got a double whammy. He's got a resurfaced knee. So the top of his bone is covered with this steel plate, and then he also has this white stuff here, which is an artificial meniscus pad.
He
still trains.
I need his information. For real. I would love to do that, man. Sometimes when they shoot me up with cortisones, then for like 2.5 weeks, it is paradise for me. Like I can walk stairs. I can jump. I can jump up from happiness. Woo! I don't feel a thing. It's amazing the difference.
What did you do to fucked up all your knee cartilage?
I'm just very explosive, and I think that just scratched everything up. Blah, blah, kicking, drilling.
Yeah.
1,000 kicks, do it, right? You know?
Ignoring the pain.
Just go through it, you know, and if it's pain, go harder. That's the mentality, right? That you're like, I got to go through it.
Well, now that you've done that all, though, and you've seen like what damage can do to your body,
I regret everything. I go, like, why did I do it so crazy? But now, again, when I see fighters go full time, I go, wow. It's weird that I did all that, you know. You look crazier back at life. You go like, wow.
After you're out of it.
Yeah.
Step away.
It's weird. I never had, though. It comes over. People go like, oh, look at him. But it's really not. I never was nervous like that. I was really good at talking to myself. Everything in my life when I went through, I realized it was all meditation. I never taught everybody taught me anything, but I'm just really talking to myself. What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, you know, the worst thing is that can happen. You knock out, you're not going to feel it. Okay, you're going to get submitted, you tap, and it's over. Okay, it's the people talking. That's the worst thing, really, if you think about it.
People talking shit.
Yeah, so, and since I don't care about that, I would have no nerves, for real. And I would always in that zone. I was addicted to that feeling, going there and go, whoop. And then I would hear, I would tell people's conversations at the first row afterwards. I would go back, I say, I heard you talking about the movie yesterday evening. All right, but Maury Smith, I was going to give Kosaka a high kick. And I'm always listening to it in the other corner. And he goes, watch out for the high kick. And right away, so I switched for a straight punch. And
that was also Japan, right, where they were really quiet in the audience.
No. That was here in America against Kosaka. That was the UFC, my first UFC fight.
Oh, Kosaka.
Kosaka,
okay.
Yeah.
And that's, Maury Smith was saying, look out for the high kick.
Yeah, because he saw me setting it up. And then so I changed it right. I switched it to a straight punch because I heard him. And I told him, I say, you should be quiet. He says, Bus, you're probably the only guy who listens to the other corner, you know. But I used to always do that. Like in Frank Shamrock's book, it's so funny to read. He says, yeah, Bus was always talking, you know, I think he kind of did it, you know, for self-meditation. But then I say, okay, why do you think I have a Dutch corner? Why do you think I was talking English, speaking English? I did it for a reason. I do it in Dutch, they're not going to understand what I'm saying. But if I, in the middle of a fight, look at my corner, I say, dude, you want to go to Roppongi tonight? Where do you want to go? Motown tonight? Yeah? Okay. It's good. What are you going to drink? You know, I would just do crazy stuff, and then I would continue fighting. And those fighters would go like, what the hell is that?
It was a distraction.
It's just a distraction.
Right.
And I would do it in English because otherwise Dutch couldn't understand. So that's why I spoke English.
When you put together this gym out in Thousand Oaks, it's you got a really nice place out there.
It's very nice.
Were you thinking about starting a team and training fighters and moving on to next phase?
No. For me, it's just a good place that I can go and train. I can still teach. I'm pretty much all the time there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I teach at 6 o'clock myself for the general audience, but also pros been coming in because I go back to the basics. And basics is all the magic happens, man. Trust me. And a lot of pros forget it, or their teachers don't want to say it anymore because now he's on that really high level, and I don't care where you are. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you, this is what you do wrong. You can hit harder if you do it like this. Try it out. You know, and most of the time they try it out, and they go, oh, my God, I hit much harder. You see, they just forget certain things, and I like to put them back on the basics. And I like to have a gym at my name. It's very close to my house, you know, so, and I can actually be there. Sunday mornings, you know, I'm going to start doing now more. I got to do the fight classes with the guys. Just enjoy that. I have a really good partner, you know, who thankfully he helped me out a lot, because without him we could have not been open, because we lost a lot of money to make the gym. But now we are at the place, like for the last half year, we started finally to make money. And that's of 2 years being here and 6 years at the other place. So in 8 years we never made any money. We broke even at the other place.
Wow.
And this is an 8,500 square foot place. You got saunas. It's a really nice place. And people love it, you know. And the thing that we have 30 people sign up, say, a month, and five stay. Mm-hmm. And those 25, they're all these tough guys that come in, and their bodies say, hey, man, you can do that shit. You know, you got to do that. You look at that. They make a lot of money. So then they come in, and they get beat up by blue belts, you know, right. Little kids. And that's it.
You have a jiu-jitsu program there as well?
Yeah, I got Rodrigo Carvalho. He was world champion last year at the Gracie. He's got 6 weeks. He told me this morning he's going to go another guy in Long Beach. He's unbelievable. He came in, was 5 days in the country, and he told me, hey, boss, the Naga championships are in Vegas. You think I should go? I said, you think you can do it? He said, yeah. I said, but you didn't train. He said, no, I want to do it. I said, yeah, sure, we'll drive you over there. So he brought him and he won gold right away. And then he won the one at the Gracie. He won gold again. So
yeah, he's a very, very high level Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt.
Very, that guy.
Gi or no gi? Does he teach?
Yeah, both.
Both?
And he is, I've never had one complaint from him. You know, hey, sorry, you got to do five classes more because we're not pulling it now, right now. No problem. Boom, right away. You know, he's the best. And we have everybody, all the parents for kids, and everybody's mm-hmm. telling me, my God, he's such a great guy.
So you teach kids classes out there
teach
as well?
Teach classes also, yeah.
When are the kid classes?
At 4 o'clock most of the time. Yeah. At 4 o'clock and on Saturdays there, I believe at noon from noon.
Oh, that's
to
great. And Thousand Oaks, where you're at, is an awesome spot. It's beautiful out
it's
there.
It's really nice.
So quiet.
It's when we arrived there, we made the turn on Westlake Boulevard. I saw the promenade there with, you know, there was a band playing on Friday night. It was, yeah. I go, wow, we want to live here, you know. No parking meters, no nothing, you know.
Yeah.
It's a nice place. Best school system, like blue ribbon schools all around, you know. It's cool for the kids. Safe, second safest city in the country.
You know what the other one is? Irvine.
Irvine?
Irvine's like the safest. It's the safest city in the country.
Really?
Yeah.
You
crazy.
See?
Yeah. So Irvine is very, very safe. It's all white people.
Yeah. You see, now, if I was a criminal,
you'd go to
those
Irvine.
Would be my targets, right?
Of course.
Because
yeah.
all the garage doors. My friend, he had a $6,000 bike and leaves the garage door. And we always said, you know, you got to close the garage. Sure enough, they stole his bike.
In Thousand
I
Oaks?
Say, in Thousand Oaks. I say, but that's the smarter criminal goes to those places because everybody, you don't have to lock your doors. You know, because it's so safe.
That's why I got robbed in Burbank.
That's it.
Well,
never.
Burbank's sketchy.
Yeah. That's
Burbank
there.
Is sketchy. Yeah. Burbank's very close to a lot of funky areas, you know. Thousand Oaks is in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Sure.
Yeah, nobody wants to go there, you know. But once you're there, they call it Pilot Town because the pilots would see from the top that there was no pollution there. That's how it got started, with all pilots living there. And then it became...
Thousand Oaks?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then it became... because they say, it's the valley. I said, dude, we're 50 miles out of the valley. We're, like, far away from it. Yeah. With us, it's, like, 4 degrees lower...
Temperature.
Temperature-wise than the valley has.
Yeah, you get that breeze from the ocean, too. I feel like the further you can get away from L.A., the better you're at.
Yeah.
You know, there's too many fucking people here. I was the other day, Saturday in the afternoon, okay? I drove down to meet a friend of mine in Bellflower, so I drove down. It took me 2 hours to get there and 2.5 hours to get back.
Yep.
On Saturday,
yeah,
bumper to bumper traffic stopped dead on the 134, stopped dead on the 405. I switched to the 210, stopped dead. It was fucking nuts. The 101 stopped dead. The 5 stopped dead everywhere on Saturday. I'm like, what happens if this shit hits the fan?
That's why I always save all my telephone calls. I save that for one day. If I, for instance, have to go to San Diego, that's where all my phone calls start happening because I save them up for that time, the 2.5 hours on the road or whatever it is, maybe 3 hours if there's traffic, and then I make all the phone calls.
Oh, you drive and make phone calls?
Yeah, do it at the same time.
You know what I do, Boss Rutan? I listen to Audible.com.
Audible.com.
Yeah.
Is that these Fox again? Is that what the commercial
is?
One of
our commercials. I do, though. It's amazing. It's great. Yeah. Audible books. Audiobooks are amazing.
Oh, yeah. You know, I love on HLN, they have these crime cases. I love that, you know. And then the man walked in, but he forgot one thing. One thing that led to another thing.
Is this like on the radio?
Oh, yeah, mysterious. It's on HLN. I don't know.
HLN?
HLN, Headline News from CNN, I guess it is, or something.
Oh, so satellite radio.
Satellite radio. And then you got those great things, murder things. You're now watching the Jody Arias case, you know. Oh, my God. That. And if she gets out, that's like the weirdest thing, the total psycho. What a psycho. I mean, she goes head-to-head with the prosecutor, and then when she thinks she has the best of him, she, like, chuckles, you know. Yeah. I got you. I go, dude.
Yeah, people are
the
watching.
The jury will watching
bitch.
You, you know. You'll see. They see it.
Yeah, if you don't know that story, she stabbed the guy, cut his head
27 times.
Shot him.
And then shot him.
She did a bunch of fucked up
but
shit.
But then she goes to the problem because she said she shot him first. But now all the blood was there and the shell casing was on top of the blood. So she shot him. She killed him first, stabbed him in the back.
Bitch is
you know?
Crazy.
Yeah, and had rented a special car. They wanted to give her a red car. She says, no, I want a white one because she didn't want to attract attention. You know, 3 cans of gasoline so she didn't have to stop anywhere so she could be traced back. I mean, it was the wildest thing. Then the .22 gun, which happened to be the murder weapon, the day before she left, very mysteriously disappeared from her grandparents, where she, by the way, lives.
Listen,
it was
you,
a break-in.
You're locked into this story.
Oh, I don't, this is on. It's amazing.
Isn't it fucked up when you see someone whose life just went completely off the rails? When you see someone crazy like that, just one day whacks out and just stabs the shit out of somebody and shoots them and.
This one, you know, she was like 3 months away from him and she was still following him. He did things on stage, whatever, as public speaking or something. She would like make pictures and she would tell people, isn't he beautiful? Isn't it be-? While they already separated, I go, you know, that's a real one
separated?
To have around. Yeah.
Well, that guy fucked the shit out of that bitch.
Oh, my
that's
God.
That's part of what happened there. That guy broke her.
That's
he did some
that
dirty
was the reason.
Shit to her.
Oh, everything. He did everything. Well, but now she tries even to say he's a pedophile, you know, and it's like, what? I mean, drags his through the mud. Poor guy. You know,
he's already dead.
Yeah, but his parents.
She's already done the worst. I know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, the they said my friend Tony Zara. Remember Tony Rancid Turtle from Columbus? He has a great saying that I say all the time. It said, "Psychotic and erotic are very close to each other.
Oh, yeah.
They're very close to each other. And those really crazy girls are oftentimes the best in bed. They're nutty, and the shit they'll do is so crazy. And so this fucking guy, I mean, you listen to some of the text messages that he was sending her, you know, you're my dirty little whore.
Oh, my God. I thought, I thought it was only in porn movies, like people write like that.
Just fucking check his text messages. He'll send you some. He'll forward you them. Yeah,
no, thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you. So polite.
I don't really.
Yeah, there's a lot of nutty people out there, man. There's a lot of fucking nutty people.
Very crazy people. That's what my wife. The karate. We got to do the karate guy story. The street karate guy.
What happened?
Oh, this is a funny story. Okay, we're at Kimbo has to fight, and before the fight, we go to a tap out party. And those people are there, and then these guys, these tough guys are there. One was, I think, selling jewelry or something, and he was with a bunch of guys. And from the guys, I think he was the toughest guy. So we're talking, and of course, you know, he didn't know who I was, so that was the best thing. And the people were talking about fighting, and suddenly he comes to forward, and he goes, yeah, I used to do karate. He says, but not normal karate. I used to do street karate. I go, wow. Street karate. So what is that? He said, well, I can tell you one thing, that my routine has saved me like 6-7 times. And I go, your routine? Yeah. I go, okay, you got to show me that routine, you know, because I would love to learn. So the guy comes to me, and I actually put this in the movie, Here Comes the Boom, you know. That was a true story. Well, that's a long story. But anyway, yeah. So the guy comes to me. He says, first of all, I would stand there, and then out of the blue, I will go, Fah! And he, no. He goes first with his elbow. He goes to me. He does it to me. This close, right? And then, Bah! And then he goes, Fah! And he was shaking in front of my face.
He's serious.
He's serious. He's this close to my face, right? Shaking. Like this close. And my friends, everybody is already like almost dying laughing.
Right.
And then he says, and then a moment, he's perplexed. And I go to the neck. And then they always do this. He says, ah. He says, and I grab him. And now he kept eye contact with me, right? And he grabs, he says, I go, ah.
And he kept. So he threw him. Knees to the body.
Knees, threw and him then on the threw ground, him on the ground. He kept eye on. Contact with me. And he stops, you know?
Okay.
So I look at him, I go, nah, you never did that. Total bullshit. I say, you practiced this in the mirror, and it looks really cool, but you never did this. You know, his friends were like, they were waiting for my reaction because they were in awe. You know, this guy was, it was his glory. And then when at the moment I said, total bullshit, I started talking, and another guy came and said, you know who he is? You know, he's actually a professional fighter. So the whole group left, but the fact... The facial expression from all those guys, they're all dressed the same, like these khakis with shirts over the top, all jewelry everywhere. You know, those guys. Exactly.
Douchebags.
The street karate guy, his routine saved his life 7 times. Yeah, you know, and they tell you, they expect that you believe that crap. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen. And I did it, and Here Comes the Boom, you remember? Head, butt, knee to the face, throw away, stomp.
Right.
Victory dance, you know. And I told that the backstage camera for Here Comes the Boom. I said, this is a true story. Somebody told me this technique.
There's a lot of those knuckleheads, right? Those street defense guys. They're like fake karate guys.
And you know, the worst part is they say... Yeah, we cannot use it in the ring because it's way too dangerous.
Yeah.
I said, well if you can kill somebody like this, you can also not kill him.
Yeah.
Right? I mean...
What?
Yeah. Right.
If you have that kind of control,
you just...
Their techniques are too lethal, boss. You don't understand. Like, it's like dropping a nuclear explosion on you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the one in Sponge, all that...
Yeah, I love those videos, like kung fu videos where guys are demonstrating techniques and how they're going to work. And have you seen the one where the old man who's got this class where he throws like
people fake, and then the karate guy, no, pancreas guy comes in
and beats the shit out
and
of
beats
him.
The shit out of him, right?
Sad, right?
And when you see him bleed, he's seeing himself, he cannot believe it. Right. It doesn't work. And he's trying to throw. And that one guy, he does, the guy goes like this.
Yeah.
And then he goes, and he makes a somersault and he falls on the ground.
It's almost like he believed his own bullshit, right?
But what are these guys doing? They're all faking it. They know.
They are, but they're probably, it's like mass hypnosis or mass hysteria. You know, like cult behavior. They get locked into believing. Like, I remember when I was in my taekwondo school was not like cultish in the sense like they nobody had to do anything crazy. They didn't try to get your money or get you to leave your family or anything like that. But the devotion that some people had towards the instructor was pretty crazy.
It's amazing.
And they didn't exploit it, but if someone did exploit it, you could see how they could get some weak people that would really fall into it. It's sort of a disturbing aspect of martial arts that one of the things that I really loved about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was that you didn't kind of see that. You didn't see like all the bowing. It was more like friendly.
Yeah.
Like when I trained with the Machado, it was like, hey, my friend, how are you? Come on. Yeah. And it was much, once they show you the techniques, but they're very friendly and more like, you know, they don't try to place themselves above anyone. There's no master this.
No, because
they don't
need to, because they're going to let you know that it is really effective right there.
And the respect that you get from them, they'll earn it just by being amazing.
But it's because they're good. All the other guys who preach and talk about it like that, they're not good. They suck.
Yeah.
Like every guy who tells me that he is unbelievable, but he never fought,
is
full of shit.
Well, you know how many times guys have told me?
Guaranteed. Yeah. It's not possible. You never... He will not know if he can do it under pressure. He will not. It's amazing.
Do you know any guys have told me, though, that they could never lose? I can never lose, man. You don't know about my mentality.
Yeah.
My mentality
is... I feel like
it's
choked.
I'm like an animal, bro. I'm like, I might go blank and then
that's the best start dropping.
Yeah.
I go blank. Yeah, that means you don't think, right? That's the easiest. I had ninjas coming into my class one time. I'm not kidding. There's a guy walking in with a stash, glasses, and a big belly, and blue kimonos, and they came in in Holland, and they walked in. There was six girls following him. It was like a cult. It was the weirdest thing ever. Later on, we found out he couldn't even do like 8 push-ups. It was like bizarre. And every time when I would show something, they would say something. Like one time, you know, I had an arm bar and this girl says, oh, we would bite in the leg, you know. So I start slowly but surely. I figure I'm not going to say anything. But then, you know, it kept going. I have somebody in a rear naked choke. And I said, and explaining. And she goes to somebody else. She said, we would poke the eyes out now. And I go, oh, excuse me, what was that? And she said, we will poke your eyes out right now. I said, wow. Let's find out. I mean, I'm going to try this with you. Is that cool? Yeah. She goes, sit down. I said, put my arm around her neck. I said, okay. In 3 seconds, I'm going to go. If you touch my eye, I'm going to break your neck. Okay, let's go. and she goes, well, what did you say? I said, in 3 seconds, we're going to go. I will count down. You come near to my fucking eye, I'm going to break your neck. Okay? I said, no. What do you mean? I said, okay. You know what? Normally, when somebody touches my eye, you think I'm going to go, oh. No, I'm going to go. They took my eye, go, and I'm going to go, motherfucker. Yeah? Then my eye hurts.
That face was awesome.
Never fuck with somebody who has a dominant position over you. If I have you in an arm bar and you bite my calf, guess what's going to break at that moment? It's the most idiot thing that people actually believe, that if you put a finger in my eye in a life in that situation, I'm going to let go of the choke. Yeah, really. Yeah. You know, I'm going to snap the neck first, and I'm going to let go of the choke.
Well, not only that, people don't understand how quick you go unconscious. Like, if someone has a rear naked choke on you, especially if you don't really know defense, you haven't been choked a lot before, you don't know how to relax, you don't know how to
talk. Oh, and do you know how hard it is to poke an eye?
Yeah, it's
fucking
hard. If
you do this, I do that, you're out. It's very hard. It's very hard. I squeeze my eye, I put my eye against the back of your neck. Back of your head. Now
see, what you're used to doing, Boss Rootin', is fighting in a sport type situation.
Sure.
Where you got rules. See, out on the street, there are no rules.
You know, and like, I cannot fight without rules too, right?
It's funny.
It's like, I can stab eyes too, only I can do it better, more accurate as well.
I do this radio show. I won't name the guy, but there was a guy that they had as their bodyguard, and he's a fucking total bullshit artist. And he was
they
a
all
ninja,
are. It's so funny.
And he would fucking do videos doing nunchucks and shit.
Why
it was so stupid.
I didn't say his name.
Master Poe. So, Opie and Anthony show. And we were on the show once, and I'm fine. You know, you do whatever you want, but as soon as you're on the air, you represent it. You know, I gotta tell the truth. You're on the fucking radio now, and people are gonna listen to you, and if I let you get away with some nonsense.
You look stupid.
And not me, man. Some young kid could be listening to that, and they want to start a martial art, and they get sucked into doing a stupid fucking street karate classes.
Yeah.
Because, and I go, listen, it's real simple. The shit that works on trained killers is the best shit.
Yeah.
You don't see Anderson Silva, you know, practicing eye pokes and fucking, well, although eye pokes are pretty fucking successful
good.
In the UFC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They work.
But you don't see him doing, death touch and fucking, you know, pressure point attacks. That shit doesn't work.
It doesn't work. I said on camera, we had an email from somebody. It said that his master could, with point pressure, they could knock you out. Oh, I got a great story about this also with Amir. Anyway, I looked in the camera. I said, okay, anybody in America you're watching right now, if you have a person who says that he can knock me out with a punch, like just pressing somewhere, we invite him. We pay him. We pay his trip. He can come on the show. He can do it on camera on me. He can knock me out. I said, it's a no-lose situation for me, because if it works, I'm signing up. I'm going to do that stuff. But I tell you, it's not going to work. We had this guy with, Amir Perez. So you know him also, right, my buddy? We see these guys on stage, and the touch guys, right?
Yeah.
So one guy goes this, tick, and this is what the person says.
They just fall back.
And then the guy said, did you see his eyes roll back in his skull? That means he was out for real. So I go to Amir, I go, this is going to be fun. Watch this. So these guys, they come walking down after the set. I said, okay, do it to me. I want you to do it to me. You want me to knock out. He said, are you sure about that? I said, do it to me. I want to know how it feels. And he goes, you know what? I can actually, I got something better. So he already steered away from it, right? So he says, let me show you this. And he walks over to his buddy. They start talking to each other. And then he walks away. And in the corner, he stands like this, huh? Like, I mean, crazy. And he runs towards his friend, and he goes like this. Fuck! In midair, he stops, and he flies on the ground.
So he threw, like, kung fu hands at him.
Doesn't touch him. I go, dude, I'm sold. Do that to me.
Right.
I'm going to attack you right now. So I'm going to the corner, and he goes, yeah, but you have to be really angry. I said, excuse me? Yeah, really angry, otherwise it won't work. I said, your friend just did it, right? I said, I think I can better act than your friend. Don't worry, I'll be in the zone. Right. You know, but will. He says, no, because if you're not real angry, it doesn't work. It needs to be that balance. So I knew it was his way out. So I walked over to him, and I'm standing like this. I say, kick me in the pills. And he says, what? I say, kick me in the pills. I say, I'm going to be really fucking pissed. You know? He didn't want to do it, needless to say. I mean, but they're idiots that truly believe that is true.
Well, it's so easy to take someone who doesn't know anything, like who's a student, and trick them like that and be a con man like that.
And you know what the worst thing is? There's teachers out there, they give you a false sense of security, and then they teach you how to defend a knife, you know, grabbing the wrist. I mean, it's so dangerous. Knife is dangerous than a gun, on a short distance at least. They teach him the wrong way, and then something happens on the street, somebody pulls a knife, and he goes to his buddy, dude, step back, I got it, you know, and they get killed.
Eddie Bravo has a crazy story about
that. And it's that guy's fault, it's the coach's fault.
Eddie Bravo, when he was first learning martial arts, actually almost got into an altercation before he knew jiu-jitsu. He was first learning martial arts. He really thought he was going to be able to, like, attack this guy and put him away with some fake karate shit.
Yeah, there you go, see?
He had a bad – Eddie's first instructor was a fake guy.
It didn't work.
The guy said that he went to – was going to China to train with the monks.
Oh, God.
Like, well, I'll be back in a week. I'm going to China to train with the monks. So Eddie was at the supermarket, and he saw the guy's car. He's like, what the fuck? And he ran into the guy at the supermarket who was supposed to be in China training with the monks.
What is the guy who killed, you know, the –
Rafael Torre.
Yeah. He would say that he would go in the forest and he would fight a whole tournament, and he would come back, and he had, like, these bloodied up knuckles and suddenly a trophy. You know?
Well, this is the story of Rafael Torre. His name was not really Rafael Torre.
Oh, no.
No, that was a fake name that he created. He was a fake Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, and he had his friend drop him off in the woods and said, I'm about to fight in a Kumite karate to the death tournament.
People
and so he's carrying this bag, and in the bag he had this fucking trophy already. Yeah. He's like, drop me off in the woods. They're going to meet me here, and then I'm going to fight for a couple days, and I'll see you in a couple days.
Yeah.
So then his friend comes back 2 days later to pick him up. Yeah, I won everything. Here's my trophy. Like, yeah. Motherfucker, you think I'm retarded? You brought that bag.
Yeah.
You brought that trophy in a bag. But, you know, he came from that era where you could get away with faking shit like that.
And people believe that. I have a lot of guys who believe stuff, you know. It's and they put the cover of magazines, and they're this and they're that, and they're nobodies. Yeah. Absolutely nobodies. But people believe it, and directors believe that.
Oh, yeah.
Here they go, oh, my God, this guy, man, is dangerous.
What do you think of Seagal's? Seagal's claims. Yeah. Did you see the interview he did with Michael Cervello on your network?
Can I laugh in your face? The thing is this. Here I go back to. Did you ever compete? No.
Right.
No, but I trained with other guys. We would fight in dojo. We all know that fighting in the dojo and fighting under pressure in the cage or in the ring, whatever, you cannot even compare to each other. I always explain it. My buddy Amir Peretz always would say it. You know, if you take a 2x4, like a long 20-foot long, right, and you have to walk over it, it's an easy thing to do. You just walk over, it's 20 feet long. Now you put that same bar up about two buildings, 20 stories up, and now you have to walk over there. Now it's a whole different ball game, and it's not so easy anymore. Now that's the same as a fighting. Yeah. And sparring, nothing compared. How many dojo fighters you know that tear up everybody, including the professionals, but when they fight themselves, they can't fight. Yeah. They panic. Yeah. You know, and that's what I always say. Until you competed, you can never tell. Yeah. You can have 100 black belts. I don't care. I got to see it. I got to see you fight. I don't believe people saying that you're good. I want to see you fight. Not in training, under pressure,
yes,
with people around.
So important. So important. Wise words by Boss Rutan, ladies and gentlemen. Learn, knowledge, respect. Follow Boss Rutan on Twitter. It's Boss Rutan, BassRutenMMA. The website also, what is your website, Boss O2, the O2Trainer.com?
O2Trainer.com, O2TrainerBlog.com if you want to check out that one video, and then BossRutan.com.
And BossRutan.com for your website, and EliteMMA.com, is that what
EliteMMA Gym.
EliteMMAGym.com for your gym, which is in Thousand Oaks. Fantastic gym. You can't go wrong training there. When is Ramon's brother back from Holland?
I think we'll be back next week. And I'll be there every Tuesday and Thursday at 6 o'clock. If you want to come in, people say, oh, can I train with you? I'm there. I love to teach. So be there. Boss Rutan is on Facebook. It's just /BossRutan.
All right, my brother. An honor, as always. And always a good time hanging out with you.
Same here.
Follow Boss Rutan, ladies and gentlemen. That's Boss Rutan, MMA, on Twitter. Thank you very much for tuning into the podcast, my friends. Thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring the podcast. If you go to squarespace.com/Joe, and if you use the code name Joe3, that's one word, Joe3, you will save yourself 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. It includes monthly and annual plans. Thanks also to Ting for sponsoring our podcast. If you go to rogan.ting.com, you will save $25 off of either cell phone or service, and they have a full line of the best Android mobile phones available. So thank you to Squarespace, thank you to Ting, thank you to Onnit. Go to Onnit, use the code name Rogan, save yourself 10% off. This Thursday night at the American Comedy Company in San Diego, Brian Redband will be there, along with Yoshi, Billy Bonnell, Jason Tebow, Tony Hinchcliffe. It's going to be a heck of a show, and it's one of the coolest clubs in Southern California. This Wednesday night in Pasadena, I am at the Ice House Comedy Club with Ari Shaffir and Ian Edwards. Should be a lot of fun. It's a 10 o'clock show. It's only $15. And Montreal this weekend is sold the fuck out, so suck it. Tough shit. We love you, but we got to sell tickets. All right. We'll see you guys very shortly. We have a podcast tomorrow with Scott Sigler, who is an author, writes cool horror and fiction and science fiction shit. And then on Wednesday, Shane Smith returns to the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And go fuck yourselves. All right, we'll see you soon. Love ya. Love ya like I love myself.